Thanks, Steve. It's us. Hi, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday. Should be a good show. A lot coming up. You can't help but be as alarmed can be over what happened.
As heartbroken, as devastated, as shocked.
I was trying to think. There's not one word strong enough to talk about the feelings, the emotions that anybody must have. Not just, I was going to say a parent, but anybody when you hear about what went on in Disney World. And I don't know what's going on in Orlando, but every day something cataclysmic happens in Orlando, Florida, the last couple of days.
Please tell me I didn't bring bad luck to Orlando.
Had nothing to do with you. You're off the hook.
All right, thank God.
So now we find out, and if you've been anywhere near the news, you already know this, a child was dragged away by an alligator in the Seven Seas Lagoon near one of the hotels in Disney World, a place that you were just at, a place that many of us... you know what I was thinking as I was imagining this? This happened at 9 o'clock last night. So there's a route, the way the monorail works at Disney World is it goes around in a circle to three of the hotels, to the Magic Kingdom, and to the parking lot. So you would see, every time you're on a monorail, you would see all these workers trying their best to find this child who was dragged off by the alligator.
So, and the ferry. There's also a ferry boat that Jim and Dylan took back yesterday. So they were just in that lagoon.
Yeah.
And it just, we watched the press conference last night at like 12 at midnight or something like that.
Yeah.
And the officer in charge, the sheriff, was just really answering questions, all of them.
Yeah.
You know, like, how long was this alligator? Was the parent, were the parents nearby? It's like, from my understanding, the toddler was walking maybe a couple feet in front of the father, but the father was there because when the boy was snatched, the father started beating on the alligator.
Sure.
And the mom came in. So, of course, everybody's saying, parents, watch your children. I don't know how much more you can watch them.
This isn't on the parent. I know people will try to put this
but
on the parents.
But it is so
not on the parents.
The dad tried to fight the alligator to open its mouth. And at the, I mean, I can't imagine the parents and the two other children seeing this happening.
Yeah.
Unless you have a kid strapped to you, to your body, like in a Baby Bjorn until they're 18.
Yeah.
There is nothing else you can do.
I'm just sick of us always trying. The first thing we do is try to blame someone.
I know.
No matter what happens.
This was a fluke of nature.
And the second thing is we try to take their pension.
Yeah, that happens. Right. That usually follows through pretty quickly.
But, you know, I will say this. The sign said no swimming, and Jimmy Mack and I were laying in bed watching the press conference last night, and I said, Jim, I know you. You're a rule breaker. It says no swimming. I could see you walking with the kids and walking along the man-made beach and keeping your feet in the water. However, no swimming, technically the kid was not swimming. I would not expect giant alligators to be coming out of a pond on a resort. I really wouldn't.
That's one of the stranger things is in all the times I've been there, I guess I just assumed, and incorrectly as we find out, that there would be alligators there in that water. And even though it said no swimming there, there's so many places on, it's called Seven Seas Lagoon and Bay Lake. There's so many places there where there is swimming. And an alligator isn't going to they're not going to realize what are the safe and unsafe areas to swim in. They're just going to troll around the water wherever they feel the need to, right?
Why are there alligators in there? And now listen, I know that alligators walk on land, and I know that they can walk from, you know, another theme park and walk to the Disney Seven Seas Lagoon. I know that. But they're using sonar, and they have the fish and wildlife officers out there that are now... They've been searching this lake for over 24 hours. This is not a good sign. And a bunch of the waterways connect.
I don't think 24 hours yet. If this happened at 9 o'clock last night, it's not 24 yet.
I guess not. But it's been a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
Definitely 12 hours, sorry.
Yeah.
But all these waterways connect. So it might be hard to keep alligators out of all the waterways,
right.
But use the sonar to detect if there are alligators and get rid of them. They've already caught four, and they have to euthanize them because they have to cut the bellies open to see
what's inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, God, this, I can't imagine this.
I know. It's as nightmarish as nightmarish could be. At one of the parks at Animal Kingdom, I'm trying to remember, are alligators a presence there? I can't remember seeing alligators part of the makeup of Animal Kingdom.
Not just walking around. There might be an enclosure where...
Yeah, maybe. Now, that whole area initially, before Disney kind of bought it and redeveloped it, that was all swampland. So at some point, there were countless alligators in that area.
Well, in all of Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what... And I know they walk on land, so I know...
My favorite parts of going to Florida are trips are finding alligators.
Yeah, they're
those are the things I remember. Yeah. Where you would see them, we'd go on hikes and see them, you know. That's what
right.
I mean, I think that's a big part of Florida.
Yeah, right.
But you don't think for a minute at a resort while it's movie night that your kid is going to get snatched into the jaws of an alligator.
I know I've told you this at some point when my cousins originally were from Orland Park, but at some point they moved, my aunt moved with them to Florida. And they had lived there a week or two, and she was on the phone with my mom. My aunt was talking to my mom on the phone, and you could hear my cousins in the background asking my aunt something, and she's going, sure, sure, whatever. Yeah, that's fine, that's fine. And my mom said, what's going on? And she said, the boys, they want to know if they can keep the alligator that they found. And she thought they were kidding. She thought they were just joking around, but they weren't. There was like a swamp near the house, and the boys were playing, and they coaxed an alligator out, and they tried to convince their mom that this would make a great pet.
We have squirrels and rabbits in the Midwest. That's it.
I know.
Maybe a snake somewhere. But Florida, I mean, that's where they live.
I know.
Again, and after the press conference, after the sheriff spoke, the fish and wildlife guy was speaking, and then a Disney representative came on and said really nothing other than we are devastated. We are helping the family as much as we can. And that was all that was said. I want to know... why there are alligators in that lagoon.
That's got to be addressed very, very soon. Whether or not they knew it is, I guess, a major factor in this. You're in a tough spot if you're Disney because what you're representing there is wholesome family fun. And they just had made the announcement earlier yesterday. Disney was going out of their way to provide hotel rooms for anybody affected by what happened at the Pulse nightclub. They made a very nice PR move and said, look, we're going to do anything we can to make this better for you. If you need a place to stay, we'll find a place for you to stay. We'll take care of that for you. And then this PR nightmare, and it is, it's a nightmare because the last thing you want to do when you go, you were just there, you know this. They want you to feel as comfortable and as safe as can possibly be.
And they do their job. And this isn't a tragic accident.
Right, right.
You know, I'm not necessarily blaming Disney. I just...
You can't. You can't. Although if Disney says we're well aware of the fact that there were alligators in there, it's part of the ecosystem, you know, we're trying our best to replicate some sort of a swamp environment, then you go, you might want to reexamine that now. I'm sure they've already thought about that. But I never, in all the times I've been there, I've never thought, and I've swam in exactly where we're talking about it, the Grand Floridian Hotel. I've been exactly there. I've never for a moment thought there could be an alligator in the water I'm swimming in.
This is not the first alligator attack at Disney World, though.
Oh, really?
I did some research. Can we take a break? We have people who want to talk about this. 312-981-7200. It's heartbreaking. I can't even imagine the parents. We were talking about this off the air. Say they're scheduled to return to Nebraska tomorrow. You don't go home without...
Sure. Impossible.
I'm heartbroken.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
I think during the war, they used to use old coins as insulation, because insulation was hard to come by during the war, so they would just use old coins. Get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. You can become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
All right, dubbed the happiest place on earth, Orlando, Florida, Walt Disney World is getting ready to celebrate its 45th anniversary this fall, but last night, a two-year-old was snatched by an alligator at one of the Walt Disney World Resort properties. As the search for the missing boy continues, guests and visitors have wondered, have there been alligator attacks at Disney before? In a state like Florida, alligator attacks, though rare, are a very real threat to residents of the Sunshine State, and Walt Disney World is really no exception.
It has happened before.
They built Walt Disney World, as you mentioned, in the middle of Florida swamps.
Yeah.
Swampland was cheap. Walt Disney bought it. Disney concealed his name during land purchase sales, referring to Disney World as simply the Florida Project.
Uh-huh.
But more importantly, Walt Disney World sits at an intersection of some of the most traveled highways in the state. But buying property anywhere in Florida means you've probably got alligators on your property as well. This is from romper.com. The last alligator attack at Disney World was nearly 30 years ago.
And does it say where exactly?
In 1986, 8-year-old Paul Richard Santa Maria was camping with his family at Disney World's Fort Wilderness, a resort and campground. While playing tetherball with his siblings, the third grader was bitten by an alligator when he strayed from the group to watch ducks by a small pond near the campsite. Santa Maria's sister pulled him from the gator's jaw as his brother began to beat the animal with his bare hands. The alligator released the grip on Santa Maria. He was rushed to a hospital to treat multiple lacerations on his left leg. The gator was a 7-foot female. It was shot and killed by wildlife and game officials.
Hmm.
Since then, no alligator attacks on Disney guests, thank goodness. But it doesn't mean that Disney's waterways have always been gator free. In 2003, a guest spotted an alligator swimming near Splash Mountain in the Rivers of America section. The park visitors managed to capture on video the massive beast swimming just feet from the log ride.
Really?
Okay, that freaks me out.
Wow.
According to the website, Jim Hill Media, Disney World Authority shut down Rivers of America temporarily, worked with handlers from the nearby Gatorland Park to finally capture the alligator.
That's spooky.
That is really scary to me. And Disney has closed all resort beaches after this alligator attack. We were wondering last night if they were going to close the parks because you're going to see the search going on.
Right. That's what I'm saying is the way Disney World is situated, you're either going to see it from the monorail, if you're traveling the monorail, or one of the ferry boats that take you from the hotels to the park, or it's not that vast of a place. It's big, but it's not that big. So even if you're on the banks of where the amusement park ends, the theme park ends, you can still see the Grand Floridian. So you would see helicopters and whoever else
the
needs to be there.
The police tape. Yeah. And, I mean, everything. This is just horrific.
Yeah.
Dr. John Duffy's coming on, a clinical psychologist, and we can talk to him about, I mean, can you imagine being at Disney today? I mean,
no.
Wouldn't you just be heartbroken?
Yeah, especially as we pointed out, coming off of the other two tragedies in Orlando, and you were just there, so you know you have to have a talk with your kids, and then all of a sudden, this is even closer, and in a situation that every parent has been in, at some point, you're in almost an identical situation like this, where you go, well, I'm safe. I'm here. There's nothing. Nothing's going to jump out of the water. No, something jumps out of the water.
And if they're having movie night on the beach, I can't imagine they. Obviously, they didn't expect this to happen. But if they knew there were alligators in that lagoon,
yeah.
Why would you have people set up at night when alligators are active?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Seriously,
I don't know.
Just so many questions we have. Justin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? How you doing?
We're doing good. This is just shocking news.
Yeah, no, definitely, guys. I just want to first start off by saying I love the show. Always got some interesting topics on there.
Thanks,
Justin.
Yeah, my first thought was it's obviously very, very devastating. You know, obviously, anytime you lose anybody or, you know, something like this, an attack on a 2-year-old happens, that's definitely something that's devastating. But my second thought was, like you guys mentioned, Walt Disney, this was all built on swampland.
Right.
You know, how arrogant can we possibly be to, we're in their natural habitat, and not to mention there were signs posted that said no swimming.
Technically, the kid was not swimming. You know what I mean?
Yes, you're 100% accurate in saying he was not swimming.
There are a lot of people texting. Yeah, but you see no swimming in your head. You're thinking, okay, there's no lifeguard. Maybe there's a riptide. Maybe I shouldn't go in the water. But, you know, people can still walk along the shoreline because it's on a resort. Perhaps they should put warning, alligators. But they don't want to do that because that would scare people.
That's like people getting coffee from McDonald's. You know it's hot. You're going to get burned if you spill it on you. You know what I'm saying?
But this is wading in the water. This is not swimming.
I mean, you know there's alligator attacks in Florida. I mean, look at all the golf courses. Look at all the different areas.
But this is Disney World, Justin. This is Disney World, and alligators can walk out of the water. So what if you're not in the water, but you're standing at the very shoreline, and your foot isn't even in the water, and this alligator could have still come out and taken this kid. He wasn't swimming.
Hey, I completely agree with what you're saying. That's why I live in Chicago.
Yeah, I know. We have squirrels and rats to deal with. And
right,
pigeons.
Right.
Rats with wings.
Flying squirrels.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts on this, and I agree with you. I mean, but what else could the parents have done other than I saw the setup. They had chairs to view the movie not very far from the shore's edge.
Oh, I mean, that in and of itself, having a, like you just mentioned, having the show, having a late movie night thing or whatever you were saying they were having at night at a beach or whatever is a little absurd to me, but hey.
I appreciate your point, and you're right. Signs are there to be read and followed.
Yep.
Justin, thanks. I have to be honest with you. I think the no swimming signs there at that particular part of the beach by the Grand Floridian are not meant because of alligators. There's other concerns there, but just yards away, literally 15 to 20 yards away, swimming is allowed, and no alligator is going to be able to differentiate.
Oh, I can go to this area, yeah. But I can't go to that area.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember why there would be no. I mean, I know this exact area, and there are no swimming signs posted, but I don't think it's because of alligators. I just think Disney considers that area maybe to just be not as optimal to swim on.
Because the ferry boats are coming.
Yeah, there's other elements there. There's like a marina there where boats are coming in and out, and the ferry boats, like you said, and jet skis and stuff like that. So I don't think that area, and there's a breakwater there. So I don't think of that. I'd be shocked if it was because they were concerned about alligators.
And if so, shouldn't there be a warning, alligators?
Yeah, you would imagine, right?
Because then I wouldn't even go near the water. I mean, if you're just no swimming, they weren't swimming.
Right.
Does that mean there's no lifeguard? Be specific with the sign. Say, warning, alligators in lagoon.
But it is part of the Disney mythos to not... You don't want to scare the people who are there.
No
even
negs.
Though,
no
yeah,
negatives.
You don't want to play on the negatives. You know, so, like I said, they're in a very tough position, too.
I know, and I am not blaming them. I am just talking out loud and trying to make sense of all this. And someone said they found alligators in the bathroom at Magic Kingdom.
What? Seriously?
And, Wayne, what did you see on Disney property?
About 30 years ago. My wife and I took our niece and nephew down to Disney World. We took them to a restaurant called the Outback. It's a real nice hotel and restaurant there. And as we were leaving, you cross over a bridge and some water, and there was a security guard there stating that everybody be careful. There's an alligator right underneath the bridge or right next to the bridge or anything like that. And my wife scooped up our niece and our nephew, and she ran in a pair of 4-inch heels and got the hell out of there.
That's at the Swan Hotel, right? The Outback?
I don't know. 30 years ago, I don't remember. Okay. If you say so, yeah, then it is.
And how about the alligator right by Splash Mountain? Explain that to me.
Right.
I know it's swampland, but, you know.
How many millions of children have been there so far this year?
Right, so you're multiplying by 30. I know.
You know, I mean.
It's a numbers game.
A child might have drowned. We wouldn't advocate draining the lakes. It just... You know, there are big numbers of people who go through there, and sometimes something terrible happens.
Yeah, but I would never think for a minute there would be an alligator in Disney that's not a fake animatronic one. Mm. Seriously, I wouldn't.
No, I know
it's swampland, but they have security. They have fish and wildlife officers. You'd think Disney would be a pretty big priority.
Here's another weird, morbid thing to consider.
Thank you, Wayne.
There's more than one Disney ride. Splash Mountain has singing alligators on the ride.
Right.
As you're going through, there's alligators singing a song. The Jungle Cruise has alligators on the ride.
Are there alligators in the Jungle Cruise water?
They're all audio animatronic.
But
they're
how do you
real.
Know that? I bet there might be a real one that walked in there.
The ones you see on the normal tour are part of the show. So... How twisted is that today and tomorrow and for the next several days and weeks that as you're going through rides in Disney World, you're seeing singing alligators on Splash Mountain or alligators that are part of Jungle Cruise? That's going to be weird for I don't know how long.
I find it strange the park is not, at least Magic Kingdom is not closed today. You can see all that. You can see all the goings on.
But then you got to take into account there are so many people that have...
They've booked
their vacation on being there. So
I know.
There's no way to win that. We got to take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Hey, Hey, Mambo. Hey, Paisan. Hey, my friend.
Buongiorno, Wendy. I'm talking Wendela, maybe.
Wendela, that's what they used to always call me. My grandpa would call me Wendina.
See, and they named their ship after you, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
I think that came first. I'm not that old. Ron Onesti is here. You know him from the Arcata Theater, and the beautiful Arcata Theater in St. Charles, oshows.com. Just saw the Zombies there.
Oh, my God. What a night. What a night.
Rod Argent, I don't know if you guys listening remember, Hold Your Head Up, Woman, Hold Your Head Up.
And my favorite song about posture.
I love it.
Chiropractor should jump on that.
Yeah, see? They should.
So he's an original member of the Zombies.
I didn't know that. See,
yeah.
I'd like to think that I know relatively, you know, what I didn't know about classic rock. Mm-hmm. And the first one, this is the second or third time I've had the Zombies. The first time I had them, I'm thinking Colin Blunt. I mean, it's a big deal. The original is going to be great. And then actually, they introduced me to Rod Argent. Like, well, that's a cool name. And I thought of Argent right away, but didn't even make the connection. And then, excuse me. And then I'm walking from my office during their sound check, and I hear Hold Your Head Up. And I'm thinking, they're done with the sound check. They got the radio on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you didn't even think that was him playing.
No, and I'm like, are you kidding? Rod Argent from Argent. Now I get it. In the Zombies, what a show that was. And it's so cool, I was just saying, to see you and your family there having such a good time, especially with your young son. You're really...
Michael's 17, and he's an old soul when it comes to rock and roll.
Jamming. You know,
oh,
and,
big time.
You know, Jimmy Mag's also, you know, doing the grind out there, the rock and roll grind.
What is that?
Well, he was still
not
this.
Sitting
you
with him
know.
Next time.
Like this. You know what I mean?
No, just kind of grooving.
He was grooving and grinding.
And, you know, Cornerstones of Rock with Jim Peterik, it's like...
And Wendy Snyder.
Narrated by.
Yes.
It just shocks me that Rick Derringer, who gave us Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, was in the McCoys doing Hang on Sloopy.
Right.
That's another like crazy thing I didn't know.
Same here. You don't think that the guy that is doing that kind of really like amazing guitar riffs and rock and roll legend, and he's doing Hang on Sloopy. I mean, what the heck's a Sloopy? That's another hour.
It's a person. It's a girl.
I know, but you know,
Bill, what other job other than ours, which is fantastic? He's got the best job in the world.
I think he can just
think of bands that he wants, or comedians, or entertainers, and you book them at your beautiful Arcata Theater in St. Charles.
Thank you. Well, that's really true. I'm the biggest fan that walks through those doors, and it is. It's really cool because that's what I tell people. I just bring in the bands and the entertainers that I like. It just so happens that a lot of people, other people like what I like, you know.
When you were a kid, was that the goal? Was that your dream eventually to do kind of what you're doing now?
You know, I've always been doing events and stuff. No, I wanted to be a chemist, chemist or a baseball player.
Oh.
Wow, that's a broad spectrum.
I know. But I've always, you know, student council and prom and homecoming, just all involved in these things.
Are you still on the student council or did you stop doing that?
Well, no, but I am available for proms.
Really?
Yes,
oh,
I
as
am.
As a date that's or excellent. To plan them?
Well, you know what?
Either way, don't turn down anything. Business is volatile.
I know.
Speaking of events, the Oakley Festa Pasta Vino is going on this weekend. Tell us about this.
Well, thank you so much for having me in on this. You know, we're always talking about our rock and roll, but I started this about over 20 years ago. And it's one of those old school neighborhoods in Chicago, which we have thousands, of course. But it's one of those secrets, you know, that the best kept secrets in Chicago. There's a little strip of Italian restaurants down by Cermak and Western. They call it like Little Tuscany.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 24th and Oakley. There's
Gemma's is there, right?
No, it used to be. Actually, there now is Bacchanalia.
Bacchanalia's
La Fontanella.
Fantastic. Yep.
Miscelli's.
That means the cheese.
Yep.
Right. Ignaz and Il Vicinato. And basically that area, back in the 30s and 40s, there's a place called Ryerson Steel. And there's some big steel mills down there. And these Tuscan workers would come from Italy, and they would spend 9 or 10 months, and they 10, 20, 30 of them would live in these little apartments on a side street there. You know, Oakley's is a little side street. And then they would send all the money back to Italy, and then eventually they'd go back, and these little trattorias, these little restaurants would open just to feed these workers. And as the area developed, you know, and they stopped doing that, matter of fact, Ryerson Steel is now gone. It stood the test of time with the restaurants, and it's such a classic little Italian neighborhood.
All family owned.
It's all family owned.
Fantastic
generations
food.
Old. Amazing.
What a sweet little story though of how it even began.
Well, you know what? It was something again started many years ago. I met these restaurateurs, and it's just great again, great stories, and they put their heart and soul in these little 30, 40 seat restaurants. You know, this isn't major chains here. This is, you get the guy coming up to, hey, how you doing? Welcome to La Fontanella or Bacchanalia. And then they walk in the back in this little, I'm telling you, 8 foot by 8 foot kitchen. Yeah. And they whip up amazing, amazing food. And the actual neighborhood was kind of being challenged for a while. So, you know what? I have family from, my wife's from the neighborhood. I used to be in the neighborhood, just a very cool pocket. And we started this little festival strictly to promote these restaurants. It's not mm-hmm. like thousands of food booths. It's 5 food booths of the 5 restaurants on the block. But I still, you know, I'm involved, so I've got 4 stages of entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's only 2 blocks long. But you know what? It is come to be a Father's Day tradition. And I can tell you, I get the biggest compliment, or the biggest compliment for me about this is, since I've been doing it over 20 years, you know, every time I do this, we get families that come up to me and say, thank you for doing this, because this is the one time we actually meet with our dad. We meet from all over the country. We fly in and we meet with our dad, or we would be with our dad here every year. And we lost him 3, 4, 5 mm-hmm. years ago. So now we still in his memory come. I mean, it's just a warm feeling to know that this event is more than just a simple food festival or beer fest or block party, that kind of a thing. It's just a tremendous cultural thing. It's about my Italian heritage, but it's really Chicago. It's like juicy, saucy, red sauce Chicago.
Yeah.
And I mean, it really is, you know, and you go there and the music is there. We got great entertainment.
All right, let's take a quick break and find out what the entertainment is. It's Oakley Festa Pasta Vino going on this weekend, Friday through Sunday.
Yes, Father's Day weekend.
We'll give you the deets. We'll be back. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, and Ron Onesti, 720 WGN.
Wendy, when you talk about lessons, who has more lessons than the man sitting right over there, Ron Onesti? Nobody.
A little finicula finicula for yourself.
Look at you. That's
I'm
amazing.
Half Italian.
Well, this is your better half, obviously. Is
no,
Italian.
My mustache is the half that's Italian.
Listen.
Handlebar style, just for the summer, Ron. Enjoy it while you can.
It goes with the goatee. It's nice. It's a nice.
Is that nice?
Oh, I keep waxing parlors in business.
Yes.
All right. Ron Onesti is here. You have an awesome podcast, which I enjoy.
Thank you.
Backstage with Ron Onesti. You can find it at WGN Plus.
Love this station.
We love you.
Love
and
this station.
Honestly.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank one you, of the man. Best times I have is at the Arcata Theater. It is beautiful to look at, and the shows are fantastic.
Thank you.
Everybody, enjoy. Here's a text for you, Ron. Please tell Ron thank you for bringing Vicky Carr to the Arcata back in November. Enjoyed the show.
Yeah, you know, it's no, she's coming in November.
But has she been there in the past?
No, she hasn't been in Chicago in so long. And that's the thing. That's the thing about the Arcata. In 1 week, we'll have like Bret Michaels and then the Zombies and then Engelbert Humperdinck.
Oh.
In the same week.
You should have Bret Michaels and Vicky Carr together. That's a good show.
It does.
They can share headbands.
Well, you know what? It's not like she's out of his realm of, you know, that he would, partake in. He would
let people read into that anything.
Yes,
they feel.
Yes.
That's
all fine. Right, well, go to oshows.com. That's where you can find out what's coming up, like Vicky Carr in November. Oshows.com. You can also find out all the information about the Oakley Festa Pasta Vino. Talk about the entertainment there this weekend.
So excited about that. Again, you know, I treat the food like entertainment, first of all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's what brings you there. It's what makes you stay. You want to. It's one of those situations where you want to eat and eat and eat. And Friday, we're doing, it's called $4 Friday, where everything there is $4 or less. So it's where really, you can really get a taste of Oakley on Friday night. And Friday night is really our headliner night with entertainment as well, because, you know, you mentioned Cornerstones of Rock and these great, fabulous garage rock bands that are on PBS and traveling all over the country. Well, our hometown, Buckinghams, are going to be there.
Oh, good.
And because you got Carlo Giammarese, the lead singer's Italian, Nick Fortuna, the bass player, the two original guys are Italian, so they're going to be
Stefano.
There. Yeah, that is Stefano, original singer as well. So it's just going to be an amazing, amazing night on Friday with the Buckinghams and the Bronx Wanderers. And I talk about the Bronx Wanderers a lot because they're actually there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And this is a band which I found in the Bronx. You know, Chaz Palminteri, obviously.
Yeah.
He's a very close friend. We're bringing his one-man show back to Chicago, back to the Arcata Theater October 15th, by the way, A Bronx Tale Live. October 15th.
I've seen that show. He's magnificent.
I have to
tremendous.
See that.
He's tremendous. So good. Oh, you got to see it. So I'm at his house. He said, come on, let's go grab a bite to eat. And so he takes me in to the Bronx, you know, right on Arthur Avenue there, right, you know, where Bronx Tale was filmed and what it's all about. And walking with Chaz Palminteri down in Arthur Avenue, it's like walking with Jesus Christ down in Bethlehem. You know what I mean? Just like, it's crazy. And he's still in character. He's got the Sonny, how's it going? Doing the three finger thing. People are yelling in the cars, yo, Sonny. He's like, yo, yo. So it was amazing. So we're sitting in this place, and we're sitting in this little restaurant. He goes, I want to show you these guys. And it's his father, two sons, and a couple cousins. They're doing all like Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And they're doing Dion and Johnny Maestro with Brooklyn Bridge. You know, all that East Coast, really cool, like kind of doo-wop, kind of 60s, 70s.
Who's doing the high voice?
He's doing Vinny, the lead, the father's doing it. And I thought these guys were amazing. So I brought them to Oakley about 6 years ago. I just one night, just give them a shot. People went nuts for them. And now for all my Italian festivals, every night they're there because they're the biggest draw. Because it's really cool. It's his father. The two sons are like in their 20s, are really good looking kids with great hair. I can't stand them. But they're so talented.
Don't touch the hair.
I don't touch the hair. They walk around with the big tablecloth around them, at least on Oakley. But you know, here's the thing. Again, I talked about variety. They'll do a whole Jersey Boys thing. Then they'll do Coldplay. Then they'll do Queen.
Really?
It's just phenomenal. And the whole place is crazy dancing. It's like Lollapalooza, only with a couple of little older people there.
Right.
And some cannolis flying around. So, but no, they're there every night.
And the rest of the year, they go back to New York. They only come in for this run? Or,
well, no, they actually
are they touring?
They tour around because since that, we got him an agent, and they're one of the biggest bands that does that kind of material around the country.
It's fantastic. Great.
It's tremendous. And Father's Day is a really big deal because Sunday is Father's Day. Mm-hmm. And this has become a Father's Day tradition because we do our whole Sinatra thing and the Bronx Wanderers, of course. Matter of fact, this year we're doing a special salute to Dean Martin's 99th birthday. We have a mass that honors the fathers that who have passed, and they're still with us.
So Dean would have been 99, and Frank would have been 100, right? Is that what's going on right now?
No, he's 101.
Right, just had his 100th birthday. Was it Frank Jr. that was there?
Yeah, and
then
crazy.
Soon thereafter, we lost him.
Well, I don't want to say nothing about the Arcata Theater.
Mm-hmm.
However,
You've had a
Scott Weiland.
Yeah,
you know, Stone Temple Pilots. You know, his second to his last show.
Yeah,
Frank Sinatra, his last show. Joan Rivers, her last television show. I can kind of go on. It's
no,
a little
don't.
Scary. Yeah, I know. It's
bad.
A little scary.
Don't do it.
So you guys want to come by and perform?
No.
How you feeling?
I just asked my son if he wanted to open up for one of the bands. I'm thinking not.
You know, I'm bucking that whole thing. You know what I mean? This is something where I feel that they all would have gone sooner.
Right.
But the feeling that they were going to play the Arcata kept them around that much longer.
Yep.
That's where I'm going with this.
Or Malocchio.
Well, listen to her with the Italian curse words. That's not a curse word, but it's a curse. Yeah, it's a word of curse.
Oh, Wendy knows the curse words too. Do you want to hear them?
Oh, I've heard them. Are you kidding?
All right, whatever. Ron Onesti, it is a pleasure to see you as usual. Oakley Festa Pasta Vino, entertainment, delicious food, a little family get together, Cermak and Western, and all the information can be found at oshows.com.
Yes, admission is free. There's parking all over. It's safe. It's fabulous, and you have a great time. Bring Dad. It's a great way to celebrate Father's Day.
Boy, it sounds like fun.
It really
is. You've done it again, Ron. Congrats.
Abbondanza.
Listen to her.
What?
I think you should have an Italian section, like 10-minute segment in Italian. Just
I can't speak it.
Well, listen to you.
You could translate. We could do the segment, and you can just sit nearby and translate whatever we say into Italian. Would you do that?
Well, you know what? The thing is, that's TV, because she's making all the hand things,
too.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
She's doing all the hand things.
But you have to. When you speak Italian, you have to use your hands, correct?
You have to. That's why we're such good cooks, because we sing while we cook,
right.
And that makes our hands go faster, mix things faster.
Yep. Exactly. I really do want to do a meatball competition with you. Somewhere, somehow, we've got to do it.
A meatball throwdown? Are you kidding? Let's do this
Mine
thing.
Are way better.
You know what? I'm glad you feel that way. It's important that you feel good about yourself, which is good. However, it's about what it's not about what we like. It's about what the masses like.
Right.
Well, we'll do a blind taste test with somebody. We'll figure it out before next year.
we'll start now. And then
all
maybe.
Right. That's fair.
But the meatball, the Wendy Snyder meatball throwdown, are you kidding me?
All right.
Let's do this thing.
All right, we will.
All right.
He's Ron Onesti. You can listen to Backstage with Ron Onesti at WGNplus.com. Go to oshows.com to find out all your musical entertainment coming up at the Arcata and to find out all the details for Oakley Festa Pasta Vino this weekend. Thank you, Ron.
Love you guys.
Thanks,
thank
Ron.
You so
right
much,
back
guys.
At you. News is next with Steve. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, some 50 wildlife specialists, including a trained alligator trapper, are still combing that lake at Disney World Resort looking for the two-year-old boy. As Steve just mentioned, really, did you have any doubt that this child was dead?
You keep wanting, in your head, you keep wanting to figure out a scenario by which this child could have survived, but realistically, and again, we still don't know for sure, but I don't know how any two-year-old could have survived with what went on last night into today.
And the length of time it's taking to find the poor boy's body. Dr. John Duffy is with us in the studio. He is a clinical psychologist. He does a Dr. John Duffy podcast, which I'm loving, at WGNplus.com.
Oh, thank you, Wendy.
It's you learned
something.
I don't
care for it, John, at all. It's just not my cup of tea.
I didn't picture you liking it,
really,
Bill.
It's really good.
You know, it's just for briefly on the podcast, when you listen to it, it may not be something exactly that you're experiencing, but the advice you give and the people that are involved are so candid about their feelings that we do take away something from it. So
that's what I've been blown away with, is the people who I've had as guests have been so open with their experiences that, you know, destigmatizes almost everything. And I'm so proud of them and kind of in awe of their openness, you know, with what they've suffered.
It's amazing. Yeah. It really is. And we need to talk about things more, and we need to talk about this poor child at Walt Disney World. Just the thought, you know, a lot of people are blaming the parents, like the whole gorilla incident, which this is completely a different situation. You're at Disney World, you're with your family, you're from Nebraska, you and your three kids are just watching movie night at the resort, and the signs say no swimming. The little kid is walking along the shoreline fairly close to the father, because as the boy is snatched by this alligator, which is anywhere from 4 to 7 feet, they're not even sure which alligator they're looking for. The dad tries to fight off the alligator. The mom jumps in and tries to do something. There are two other kids probably watching in horror as their little brother is snatched up. How do you recover from this?
It's almost unfathomable, you know. And initially, I think you're just in trauma, you know, and you can't process it. I think it's kind of the body's way almost of, you know, shutting down, protecting itself for the time being until you're at a place where you could deal with it. And, you just hope that there's such this groundswell of support for these people and that there isn't a lot of blame for them, so that they can recover with some dignity and support and not being kind of the bane of the media that's so prevalent around this thing, you know?
People are so quick to judge, aren't they?
So quick to judge, you know? And you picture this scenario. I was listening to you guys when I was driving in, and you were describing, you know, that Jimmy would have been like holding Michael or Dylan's hand walking in the water. I would have been that guy. I don't know if you would have been that guy.
It says no swimming. They weren't swimming.
Right.
What did you tell me off the air?
I have been to this exact place at the exact same, I mean, the exact place at this hotel with my kids in the water and not thought anything of it.
Right, right. So this idea of parent blaming is absurd, right? Because, you know, you're at Disney, and who wouldn't think this is going to be perfectly fine?
Yeah.
You know, so parent blaming here is just pointless, I think, you know, and yet there are people all over the place talking about that right now in every form of media, and I just think that's adds to the devastation that's already there.
And
unnecessarily,
you can't like if you're the parents, you spend the rest of your lives maybe second guessing every move that you made that day. But really, sometimes, and Steve said this earlier in the news, sometimes there's just things happen that you just cannot control.
We like the idea that we can protect our kids in every possible circumstance, but this is kind of a glaring example of what would seem like a perfectly safe circumstance where that's not true. And on any given day, we don't know. When our kids walk out the door, we don't know. And yet you got people like me. I always encourage parents, like, you give your kids more independence, let them out there more.
Right.
Is there a risk? There's always a risk. This is one of those days where that becomes so apparent. But the more they're out there, the more competent and resilient they feel in the world, and cloistering them really doesn't do them a great service at all. They're not prepared if they're over cloistered. But every once in a while, once in a great while, something tragic happens, and it makes us all, I think, recoil from that thought a little bit.
But unless you have your kid completely strapped to you at all times, like, you know, the baby Bjorns, which are so cute, you know, have them in one of those till they're 18. And even then, there's no guarantee that you're going to protect
the adolescent borns. You've seen those.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, keep your kids strapped to you.
And
for
old
years.
Wife Bjorn. There should be one, you know, because I was getting tired walking around Disney.
Yes. John, what about the families who are not directly affected by this? It's one family's tragic, tragic nightmare. But for all these other families that are in the happiest place in the world and they're seeing these things play out right before their eyes, what do parents tell their kids to assure them that this is a fluke thing?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because there are certain things that kids want to know. And kids are kind and kids are empathic, but they do want to know they're safe. So you want to give them some feeling that they're safe, and you want to maybe show in these next few days, especially if you're down in Orlando, that, you know, you might want to show more in the way of precaution, right? So you might want to keep your kid a little closer to your hip and let them know that they're okay. My bias would be not to leave, but to stay and to, you know what I mean? And to experience and maybe enjoy some of your time. But the more comfort and assurance you can give them that they're going to be okay, the better. What I also find kids like is being able to do something. You know what I mean? What can we do for this family? Can I make a card for them? Can I write to them? You know, can we email them or something like that? And I would guess in the coming days and weeks, there will be opportunities to do that. So I always encourage parents to allow their kids the opportunity to express empathy in the way that they're drawn to.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good way to accept it, kind of to help someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. Because oftentimes we parents are far more frightened about what might happen to our kids than our kids are. You know, we make this presumption that they're going to hear about this and immediately be scared. And some kids will, but a lot of kids just feel terrible for the family. And you want to give them some air and some space to express that because kids are really empathic. And most parents I talk to, this is what they want from their kids more than anything else, is the ability to express empathy. And unfortunately, coming out of Orlando, there's more than one story that gives them the opportunity to do that.
And we'll discuss those other stories. The Pulse nightclub singer Christina Grimmie, who was gunned down by a fan who was meeting up with her. Dr. John Duffy in the studio. You can reach him at drjohnduffy.com. He's a clinical psychologist. And hey, pick up his book, The Available Parent, because it's very helpful. We'll continue 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Dr. John Duffy is with us. He's a clinical psychologist, a life coach, a parenting and relationship expert. You can go to drjohnduffy.com. Check out his book, The Available Parent. It's awesome. You also have a podcast at WGN Plus, which you're doing a great job with. We were talking about the tragedy at Walt Disney World. And when the nightclub, the Pulse nightclub incident happened, was it Saturday night into
Late
Sunday?
Late Saturday into mm-hmm. Sunday, yeah.
We were heading to Magic Kingdom on Sunday, and I got AP alerts. The kids were on Facebook and saw posting, so we were all aware of it.
Right.
13 and 17, so my boys are old enough to know what's going on. And I said, listen, I don't want to scare anybody. We're going to Disney tomorrow. I know that they're going to do their best to protect us. I don't want to scare you, but I want to tell you right now, if something is up that's out of the ordinary, if you hear pops, if you hear sounds that sound like a gunshot, if you see weird actions from people, if you hear people screaming, hit the ground, hide, do whatever you can. And they agreed, and that's all that was said, and we moved on. But I felt I had to say that.
I think you did have to say it. It's a different day and age. I'm thinking there must have been a time not that long ago when parents might have been able to shield their kids right from this news.
That's what you said, Bill. It's like in the day of cell phones, you know, you could probably come home and not know this happened sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, you keep the TV off and, you know, there was no Reddit and there wasn't, you know, there was no, you know, internet and there wasn't kind of 24-hour news channels and you could just kind of like skate under the radar. But given the circumstances now and given the ages and the level of sophistication of your kids, I think it's completely appropriate and mandatory, right? This is a safety issue, so they have to know. And they're going to learn anyway. You know, so if you don't say anything, then I think they might feel like they're flying a little bit without a net. But if you say, here's the plan, here's what we're going to do, I think that's important. I think that's kind of the way we have to parent in general from here going forward. You know what I mean? For better or worse, there's always this possibility that something could happen. And so we want our kids to have in the back of their minds, here's our plan B. Here's what's going to happen if something tragic happens and we're right there. So I actually think you handled that beautifully, Wendy, knowing where your kids were and what they could handle. And I suspect that they were able to kind of assimilate that into their day and have a day, you know?
I remember, John, my parents and my brother and I think I was 5 or 6 and my brother a couple years younger. The only coaching they gave us was, what if somebody is trying to kidnap you? What if somebody says, yeah, I'm his uncle and I need to take him, and what we need to do in a case like that? But there was never anything as in-depth of, what if there's an active shooter? What if there's a terrorist situation? That never happened a generation ago.
No, it's so different now. And, you know, our kids are aware of it. To some extent, the kids I work with are a little desensitized might not be the right word, but they're certainly familiar with the possibility of it, in the same way that we were familiar with kind of just the idea of stranger danger, right? Which felt like the worst of it. And, but now, you know, the stakes are higher. Yeah, one interesting element of it is this stuff, as much as we're talking about it lately, the last couple of years, the last, you know, few days, this doesn't happen all the time, you know? So it is something where we can assure our kids, like, by and large, we're going to be safe. We're going to be fine. But in the event that you hear a loud pop or you see a commotion, you know, make sure you take care of yourself. Hit the deck. Do what you need to do. You know, I think this is the world we live in and the precautions that we need to take. It's different than the guy in the white van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is.
And it's okay to play that numbers game and say the odds are against something like this happening, but you never know. So just to play it safe, here's what we want to do. Right?
I think we have to do that. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I work with a lot of kids who get really, really anxious and sometimes irrationally anxious. And if they hear one story, they kind of focus in on that like a laser, like, Mom, Dad, could this happen to me?
Right.
You know, and if the answer is, well, yeah, it sure could, without the caveat of, but it really, in all likelihood, will not.
Right.
You know, then that can just increase that anxiety exponentially really quickly.
Sure.
And it's hard to recoil from it.
When you mentioned that kids are more familiar with it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're right. Desensitized is, but it's becoming the normal, unfortunately.
It is.
And it's funny because some kids will freak out and zero in on things and be very anxious about it. And then my son Dylan says, you know, what if we're at a restaurant and there's a shooter and I hide under their table and he doesn't see me and I know he doesn't see me? Would it be okay if I went and tried to attack him? And I said, no.
Yeah.
If you're safe, you're safe. But I think these kids also feel like I could try and help people, but you have to worry about your own safety.
Absolutely. And this is tricky for kids because it's not, I don't even think it's just this hero complex. I think this is genuine desire to help. Like,
absolutely.
Right, there's these mass shootings and boy, I bet I could stop the guy right in the middle of the whole thing, right? Or, you know, maybe I could have stopped that alligator, and it comes from the goodness of their heart, not just this Rambo kind of like, you know, I want to be the guy, I want to be the hero. So to Dylan's credit, you know, I completely get the idea of, boy, can I help minimize the damage that's happening here? But the only right answer is, nope, you got to take care of yourself and trust the people who are in charge and trained to do this stuff, to do their jobs, that we're going to be okay. Just sit tight, stay where you are. There's no doubt that's the right advice for your kids. But it might be good to take a moment and say, I can appreciate how badly you want to help.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Do you think possibly that kids are desensitized because of the quote unquote normalcy of going to a hockey game and having to walk through a metal detector and going to their school and walking through a metal detector? And some schools, and I know we've had a text or two on this, we only had tornado drills, but now schools have shooter drills at school. It's a regular thing now. So maybe just having all that around them makes them realize it's a reality.
And different kids are different, Bill. Yes, because I think for a lot of kids, like, you know, they're so used to this and desensitized. And I guess this is what we do when we walk into school and we get checked and I take my shoes off at the airport. And then every once in a while, kids get really inquisitive. Why do we have to do this? What's this all about? And that's where I think the anxiety rises. I almost feel like emotionally, the kids are a little desensitized are feel a little calmer about it. Like, yeah. Okay, I'm willing to do this for safety sake, you know, but not picturing an event happening. Whereas some of the kids who really think it through, I think get anxious about it and worry about it. Yeah.
We don't have much time left, but I just want to mention that the survivors of the Pulse nightclub shooting, and I'm sure the parents of this poor boy at Disney, feel some kind of guilt and remorse that they survived and the people around them didn't.
Yes.
That's a real thing, isn't it?
It's a real thing, and I've dealt with that professionally for decades, including one woman who survived the World Trade Center attack, literally checked out of the Marriott 15 minutes before the first plane hit, and is still, to this day, 15 years later, suffers, you know, like, why
guilt.
Me? Why did I survive that? You know, so my bias and my advice to those people is talk to a therapist, talk to a professional and work that through, and, live your life in honor of the people who have passed. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so if you need some motivation to lead a good life, let that be part of the impetus to lead a good life. You know, that you were lucky enough to survive these things, you know, and honor those people who have fallen.
And Bill, yesterday you and I were saying that Roe had mentioned something about the media seems to be covering all these victims and their stories. And you and I mentioned that we owe it to these victims to read their stories and see what a great person they were and to celebrate their life, basically.
Yeah, you hate the idea that people just become a number, right? 50 is just this, and 50 is particularly like this round number, and it becomes history. And the Orlando event within a couple of days. So I'm so glad that some of the media, I saw Anderson Cooper really pause, Ashley Banfield, some other people really pause and spend a moment on each of the stories of each of these lives, because these were each people.
John, we're bombarded with the story of the shooter. We know his background.
Right.
We know what he's done his whole life. That's not fair. We should know the victim's story at least as much.
And I think there's some truth to the idea that the more attention you give the shooters, the perpetrators of this violence, there is this propensity, I think, for a copycat, for somebody to come along like, hey, I want to go out in infamy as well, you know? And that's the last thing we want to encourage and glorify in any way, right?
Yep.
These victims, these are the people we should be attending to these days,
right,
for sure.
Thanks for making sense of it all. He is Dr. John Duffy. You can reach him at drjohnduffy.com. His book, The Available Parent, is awesome, and his podcast at WGN Plus. What's the original name of the podcast again?
It's the Dr. John Duffy Podcast.
It's got a great name, John.
Thank you.
It really does. Thank you for being here.
Thanks,
appreciate it. We'll take a quick break, and then Kim Gordon has the news for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thank you very much. I have to be honest with you, and I hope you feel the same way as I do. I'm a big Blackhawks fan, and you are, and the city has become huge Blackhawks fans.
That's
funny,
all I can think
about. Funny what winning will do.
I know, but I jumped on the bandwagon a couple years back, but it was when I got my jersey is when I really started.
Is that when it became official?
Oh, my God. I miss it. Miss hockey. Congrats to the Penguins, I guess, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But I will greatly miss both Brian Bickell and Teuvo Teravainen, both very important elements of the Chicago Blackhawks over the past couple seasons. I got to meet Brian Bickell on more than one occasion. I did an event with him a few years ago. He was such a nice man and an incredible Mario Kart player.
That's what you said.
I've never seen anybody that great at a video game as Brian Bickell was at Mario Kart. There was an event. We did an event, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago, where kids went up against each other to play Mario Kart for some charity, and then the winner would eventually play Brian Bickell, and I just assumed Brian Bickell was there because they asked him to be there, and that would be it. But he played the kid who won the whole championship, and he creamed him.
And he said he was not giving that kid any special treatment.
Nope.
He didn't care, kid, woman.
Nope. And can I tell you, I think I may have told you this. This is what Brian Bickell did that day that I thought was one of the nicest gestures I've ever seen a sports star do. And he didn't have to do this. In my life, I've been fortunate enough to be around some of the Cubs and some of the White Sox and some of the Bulls and now Brian Bickell at these events. And here's what Brian Bickell does. He gets there, and there's a couple of hundred people there with things that they want autographed from him. Jerseys, hockey cards, sticks, you name it, they're all waiting in line and they all have something that they want Brian Bickle to autograph. So I'm backstage with them and they explain to Brian, they go, here's the way we'll do it. The kids are lined up and you can sign, but you can only sign things that have an NHL endorsement,
right,
a logo
stuff.
On it. Yeah. They can't just bring up, because they had even said this, it's part of the rules of the NHL.
What if somebody made a Play-Doh Brian Bickle?
It would be breaking the law and everyone would go to jail. So they explain this to him, and he's nodding and nodding and nodding. And then when they're done, they go, anything else? And he goes, yeah, if somebody gives me something that they want me to autograph, I'm going to do it. And they just looked at him, and they go, okay. And then they left, and that's what he did.
You don't mess with Brian Bickle.
No. But I thought, that's right. Don't play the corporate game. Be a real person. And if some 8-year-old kid who loves you and enjoys your work brings something, don't say, now, because of the rules of the NHL, I can, you got to buy something that's sanctioned by the NHL, and then I can sign it. Be a real guy, and he was. And go,
where is
yeah.
he now?
Well, yeah, he's in another city, but it took 3 years.
And what else was I going to say about Brian Bickle? God, I completely just lost it. It flew right out of my head.
He's a good guy. I mean, really, he was such a good guy. And you know what else? And I don't know Teuvo Teravainen, and I only know that it was fun to watch him play for the Hawks. Brian Bickle legitimately enjoyed playing hockey. You could see it on his face. It had nothing to do with money. It had nothing to do with anything. He just wanted to play hockey. And I like seeing athletes who go, I'm still a kid, I'm an adult, and I'm making money playing a sport that I love. But he really seemed to enjoy himself.
Not as much as Panarin. That kid looks like
he's always
just
smiling.
I know. It's like, you know, I don't really understand the language that much, but I know the language of fun.
Yeah.
And he skates around like a little boy.
Isn't that, but really, when you think about all the trappings of being a pro athlete, you think to yourself, can you achieve that level and still legitimately have a good time playing it? You're playing a game, really. I mean, I know it's high stakes, but can you really have a good time? And I think more than anybody, Panarin answers that question. Every time he shoots a goal, every time he aids in with an assist, you just see that big smile and you go, that guy's having fun. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
That's fun to watch.
I also like the Brian Bickle little pit bull calendar that is hanging up in my house.
Mm-hmm.
He had a fond feeling for these animals that needed to be adopted, the Brian and Amanda Bickle Foundation, and the calendar is pretty sweet with all these athletes holding pit bulls in the... Although there's someone that's not a Blackhawk that I'm like, why is this person in here?
Another hockey player or somebody else?
No, it's like a, I don't know, a Chicago celebrity, but I can't remember who it was. Not that it was bad, but I remember thinking, why is this not
well,
a Blackhawk
player?
Well,
we only have a couple of celebrities in town, so it's either Billy Deck or the mayor. Who is it? Which one is it? Oprah's gone. We only have two left.
I think it was Billy Deck.
Is that it? Wow, that's unfortunate. All right, let's take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, you know this music.
That is the theme from Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't know if it's anything else. Was this song? I don't know if this song was created just for Curb Your Enthusiasm. I've never heard it anywhere else.
I don't know. We should find that out, who composed it, because I am just happy and thrilled that the Emmy and Golden Globe winning comedy series Curb Your Enthusiasm, or as people who are regulars call it,
just Curb. People are in a hurry now, Wendy. They don't have time for the whole title. It takes too long. Just
IDK.
Curb. Right.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Starring Larry David, will return to HBO. It'll be its 9th season. I got to subscribe to HBO again.
Yes.
That's really that this and The Sopranos were the only
it.
Things. Yeah.
It's well worth it.
Details of the new season will be announced as they are confirmed. There is a fantastic quote from Larry David that I would like to share with everyone. And he said, asked why he decided to come back. Larry said, and I quote, in the immortal words of Julius Caesar, I left, I did nothing, I returned.
Mm, that's very funny. It's so funny that in the press releases for this, they call it HBO's longest running scripted series, when everyone connected with the show will tell you it's not scripted. I mean, there's an outline of what they want to have happen in every episode.
But there's no way they stick to that.
But they don't know. It's almost entirely improvised. But from the HBO standpoint, It's their longest scripted series.
I heard that today, and I was even shocked that that was truly the case.
Yeah.
I thought that's what they pride themselves on. Why would they say the opposite?
I'm not sure what exactly.
Well, that's kind of like a Seinfeld thing to do.
Right, it is, isn't it?
And Jeff Garlin has got to be back.
Yeah, he plays the agent Jeff Green, right? Yeah, I would imagine.
Isn't he on the Goldbergs now, though?
He is. He's the star of the Goldbergs.
Oh, my God, yeah. I love that show. Yeah. I really do. And I'm still loving The Real O'Neills. You should watch that. It's very funny. And who's his wife?
Susie Essman is her name.
Okay. You know her on the show. Mm-hmm. I still swear more than she does.
Well, that's interesting. On the show, her character
swears more than I do.
Susie Green swears more than you.
She does? You admitted it. But I walked you into that.
But she's a fictional character where you're
so
most.
So am I.
That's debatable.
I was named after Wendy and Peter Pan.
Yeah, but that's not the same as being fictional yourself. Mm. You're more, you're kind of fictional too. Boy, that's tough. That's a close call. I'll talk to the boys upstairs and see what we can come up with.
I was walking around the Peter Pan exhibit at, what is it? Ride?
Disney World. Oh, yeah, the ride. Yeah,
I
attraction.
Guess it's a ride. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And I was walking around telling, I just would say it very loudly, well, my name is Wendy, and my family was bored with it, and no one else around us gave a care at all.
Did you think you'd get cuts in the line
for
saying that?
No, I just wanted to feel special. I was named after this, you know. I'm
so irritating.
You said
it loud enough so other people in line could hear you?
We had to wait a long time for a 2-second ride, which was really awesome.
But still.
Oh, yeah, I was annoying everyone.
Wow.
And then there's a picture of Peter flying, and I said to my son Michael, who has red hair and an elfin nose that sticks up a little bit, I'm like, oh my God, you are Peter Pan.
Right.
I was kind of annoying in line. It was a long wait. And can I just tell you something?
Sure.
There was a young couple behind us in line, and there were fun things to do while you were waiting. They have a new exhibit, I guess, before you get on the ride. So you can play around and catch like these shadow butterflies.
Oh, cool.
It's really fun what they've done.
Yeah.
And as we're just at the end of the fun exhibit, ready to turn to board to get on the ride, there's this young couple behind us who I would say maybe 17 years old tops. And this girl, like I was leaning against the wall and my arm was up. I was leaning against the wall and I kind of looked to my right and her head was under my arm. And I said, can I help you? And she just kind of popped back. And then she was like really like giving me flat tires when we'd move up in the line. She'd step on the back of my flip.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, what are you doing?
You don't do that to Wendy from Peter Pan. Did you say that to her?
No, I didn't because she got me she had ruined my mood by this time and she was just crowding me and she never talked to me and she looked like she was just trying to peek ahead to see how much farther we had to wait. But wait in line behind my family. Don't put your head under my arm.
I'm surprised you don't bring those orange traffic cones with you
to
in
hit
a situation
people
like
with.
That. Not to hit with.
I'm surprised you didn't just pop her in the face with your elbow.
Wow. It was so irritating because it's like when somebody gets into your personal space bubble.
Right.
I mean, really, it was a really long line. It said 35 minutes. It was more like 50 to do a 2-second ride.
I don't know what happened with that ride or attraction, Peter Pan's Flights. There was a time where that was a very fast-moving line. And also Pirates of the Caribbean. Anytime you went to Disney World, you go, oh, that line's going to be 5, maybe 10 minutes at the longest. Now, with Pirates of the Caribbean, I understand the influx of tourism because the movies happen.
And they've added some new things to that.
They've put Black Jack Sparrow in the ride. So I get where that line would increase. But I don't know what happened with Peter Pan Flights.
It's a classic.
Well, you know, it's like it's a small world, too. Any of those rides that are perpetually moving, you would think would go fast.
Sure.
You know, and you get on the conveyor belt and you hop on, unless you have to stop for somebody who's handicapped or something like that. But otherwise, it's just like hop on, hop off, keep it moving.
Doesn't work that way.
Those lines build up? I don't get it.
I wanted to punch this girl so badly, but it was the happiest place on earth. And I really was like.
I
didn't say anything, Bill. I swear to God, I didn't say anything. I said something to Jim, so Jim kind of blocked me. He kind of like made it so she couldn't sneak in to look around the corner.
Yeah.
And then when we were walking out, she gave me a flat tire again. And I said, oh, my God, you guys, really? You were on our backs during the whole ride and now? And they just walked away and the young little guy said something like, meh, 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 meh. And I just let it go. But really, they were just so annoying.
Yeah, everybody kind of has their own interpretation of line behavior in a situation like that.
She was invading my personal space bubble. And trust me, you don't want to be in there. It's not that great.
It was very Wendy of you to just not do anything.
That's
you
what
guys
Wendy
both,
from Peter Pan would have done, see, exactly what you did.
I wanted to throw fairy dust on her, but I didn't have any.
Or
but here's
acid.
Another thing. There's a part in the line where the fairy dust like falls on you. So I was kind of basking in the fairy dust. They have some kind of thing going with the cameras.
I didn't think when this day started I'd hear you say that phrase.
I know.
I was basking in the fairy dust.
I was. It's like I'm waiting in line. I can't wait to get to the fairy dust area where the little cameras show you the fairy dust. And it looks like it's dripping down your head. So I got to the fairy dust part of the line and I went to bask in it and put my arms up. And she like came and got me out of the way of my own fairy
during
dust.
During the fairy dust?
That's what really pushed me. And I still didn't say anything till the very end. I tried so hard, you guys, but I wanted to trip her so badly.
Come on.
I didn't do it. All right, real quickly, before we do a break, we have to do a quick phone call.
All right.
And then we are going to get ready for the Wintrust business lunch.
All right.
Hang on. Let's hear who this is.
Oh, given.
Wait, there's more. That's just me.
I know one of the voices. I know the voice of the grizzly bear. I can't make out the human voice or this.
All of our animal friends here that are gathered in the WGN studios, the Allstate Showcase studio, want to wish a very happy birthday to someone. It's, quiet, Bill.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself. It's noted pet expert Steve Dale's birthday, Wendy.
Yes, it is.
And it's a very high number. I would say the number on the air, but people would fall down. It's a very high number. Steve, happy birthday. Noted pet expert Steve Dale.
I told you you didn't have to talk. He just would want to
hear
this.
He'd rather hear the animals talk.
I would. It actually, I'm understanding what they're telling me.
They're saying, have a happy birthday.
Well, not exactly. And I can't repeat everything they're saying. Because otherwise, I don't know if we're on delay or not. Thank you, guys. This is the best birthday wish I have ever had. It's amazing.
Boy, that's
so
pathetic.
Thank you very much.
Well, a big surprise party later, of course, at the Rainforest Cafe. That's going to be exciting for all of us.
You know where I'm going in a couple of hours, actually?
Where?
Through. To the zoo.
Well, yeah, of course.
Brookfield or Lincoln Park?
Lincoln Park, which is pretty close to where I live. But Brookfield is great, too. Yeah, I know. I understand. I agree with you.
All right, now he's just talking to the animals. Right. Okay, well, we wanted to wish you a pre-zoo birthday greeting. So happy birthday, Steve Dale. When are you on again?
I am on Sunday morning at 6:30. I'll be talking about what they said.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Happy birthday.
I love you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You look great, all things considered. That was a mixed message. Thanks, Steve. All right, a quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
That should be your sign-off from now on. I'm
Get me out of here.
Yeah. You know what threw me off? For the
what?
First time, we have a heat index.
Oh, yeah, that's right. First time this year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 93.
Wow.
Right, nothing.
And the heat index is similar to the wind chill factor, right? Is that similar, or how do they differ? Is it the opposite? What is it?
Well, it's just
temperature feels hotter than it actually is because of
humidity.
You know,
but isn't
wind,
that the same
sunshine.
As a wind chill factor?
No, like that's how fast the wind is blowing and making it colder.
Right.
But what's the term? Like a lot of times in the winter, they'll say it's
dew point.
Three. It's not dew point. They know
the
it's not dew point. No, there's
humidity?
Something like it indicates.
Get skilling.
The same thing.
He's on
like
vacation.
Go,
you got to wait for this question.
Oh, that's right. He's in
Alaska.
But
I guarantee
say
you there's no heat
it's
index
2 degrees
there.
Below zero, but with the wind chill factor, it feels like it's 18 degrees below zero.
Right, because with wind blowing, it makes it colder.
But this is the same. It's still you're still
with
being
deceived.
With the wind
deceived. Blowing, it makes it hotter?
No, but you're being, you know what the regular temperature is, but you're being deceived into believing it's either way hotter or way colder. You know what I mean?
No.
It's the same thing.
I kind of get where you're coming from, but it's not the same thing.
Well,
it's the same thing, but the opposite, because
the
we're talking
which,
extreme cold, extreme hot.
But the means by which you get there are different, but it's the same thing. It's the weather's way of saying, even though it's X amount of degrees,
it's
it feels way colder or it feels way hotter.
Okay, well, here it is. heat index is a result of the combined effects of the temperature and humidity in the air.
Exactly what I said. Right. Exactly what. And wind chill factor.
Wait a minute.
Hold on. Sorry.
Hold the phone.
Hold
I know
everything.
We all have computers, but Bill doesn't.
I don't know
what.
What
it
know
works.
What, I know there's button.
Call it up.
Wind chill.
Yep, I was right.
Is
I'm right.
Affecting lower than the air temperature caused by the wind.
Exactly what
so
I said.
So that's why it's called wind chill.
Right, but you know what I mean, right? They're alike in that what they both do.
It deviates from the actual temperature.
Right, they're
correct.
Both saying with the heat index or with the wind chill factor, it is this. Here's your regular temperature, but this is what it feels like temperature.
Kim, I've known him a long time. I have to help translate every once in a while.
I think you went to the new weather thing at Epcot and learned all about
yes,
the weather.
Yes, I did.
We didn't go to Epcot this time. That is your fake typing?
That's not fake.
Just at least use
it sounds like a ticker tape.
Yep. That's what it is.
That's the worst.
By the way, I'm still upset from yesterday. Can I now Kim was not a part of this, but can I share this with Kim and see if I'm right in being upset with this? You've met Steve Bertrand, right, Kim? You know Steve Bertrand?
Once or twice.
Steve
seems like
comes
a nice
in,
guy.
And he's doing the crosstalk with Wendy and myself, and he says, we're gonna talk about mead. And Wendy and I, you know, we're humans. We got excited, too. We're like, well, finally, somebody on the radio is brave enough to talk about mead. And
I didn't know what it was.
It's this, like, medieval drink. It's like sweet beer, kind of. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. But then I said to you guys, you know, it's best served in flagons. And you guys just stared at me.
No, I said, wasn't that Wilma Flintstone's maiden name?
Right. And that was Flag Hoople.
Okay.
That was Flag Hoople.
Of course he would know that.
So I get a death stare from Wendy and from Steve Bertrand, and they're like, what? And I go, that's how they used to serve meat up in flagons. That was the thing you would...
It sounds like Harry Potter talk to me.
I know. But nobody believed me. So then
believed you.
But I used the computer, and I showed you and Steve, and then they just made fun of me for the next 5 minutes.
No, Steve says... He said something like, I don't know which surprises me more... You're being right, or you looking it up?
Right.
You're taking the time
right.
to look it up.
But I was knowledge shamed.
Isn't that it?
I was knowledge shamed by my own coworkers.
I very rarely knowledge shame you, because the things that no one else knows about, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you are a walking encyclopedia of, you know,
of
somebody who knows
knowledge.
All kinds of stuff that nobody else should know or
right.
would know.
Or
Minutia Men.
Cares.
Exactly. Is that the name of your band?
Yeah, I'm in a Spanish boy band called Minutia. Yeah.
All right, Carol wants to make some sense of this. Hi, Carol.
Hi. You guys make me laugh all the time.
Thank you, Carol.
I've been listening to you on the phone, waiting to come and tell you you're looking for the words heat index.
Right, heat index.
Which tells you that even though the temperature is 99, it feels like 118.
Yes, right. But did we know that? We knew it was heat index, didn't we, or not?
Yeah, he just was trying to...
And he said that? Okay.
But I was trying to figure out the winter equivalent of it, and that's wind chill factor.
Yeah.
Where you're getting
well,
one temperature, but
it's... The winter is chilly and the summer is hot.
Yeah,
heat.
Of course, right, right. That's true.
You guys should go out together.
We'll get a flagon of mead together. I'm not afraid
yes.
to do that with Carol or anybody else.
Why don't we?
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Carol.
You're
thanks
welcome.
For
appreciate
laughing.
It.
Okay.
Thank
bye.
You.
We have to laugh. I mean,
all
really,
we can do,
just
Wendy.
Stuff going on in this world, and poor Orlando is where it's all happening.
Right.
We'll talk about that later on this afternoon. Something I wanted to share with you. You saw the movie Deadpool, right?
Yeah. I liked
Quit
it a lot.
Quit looking at my notes. I'd like to surprise you.
All right. What's up?
You're a news hound. There was a cameo of a special someone whose tagline was, God'll get you for that, Walter.
So that's either Beatrice Arthur or Maud Findlay.
Right.
Yeah.
It's B. Arthur, and I just want you to know that it cost $10,000 for B. Arthur's face to be featured in Deadpool.
I'm trying to remember where it was in Deadpool. Was he watching television or something? And she
lead
was
actor
on?
And producer Ryan Reynolds reveals that it cost the project about $10,000 to have his character wear a tank top illustrated with actress Bea Arthur's face.
Oh. Why would it cost that much?
Because she didn't approve it. She said, give me...
Well, she's no longer
her
with
estate.
Us.
Her estate. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Who do you make the check out to if you're...
Maud Co.
Beyond? In the comic books, Deadpool is Arthur's self-proclaimed number one fan and likes to watch episodes of The Golden Girls.
Oh, that's funny.
The writers even named the spaceship for the Deadpool Corps the B. Arthur in her honor.
Very funny.
So it seemed natural for the actress to play a role in the film at any cost. In the commentary track, Reynolds said that showing the tank top in the film was potentially cinema's most expensive Easter egg ever, adding that, as a producer, I had to approve that $10,000. You can't have a Deadpool movie without B. Arthur.
Years ago, remember the movie Superbad?
Yes.
All right. One of the characters was wearing a Richard Pryor shirt. So Superbad, the guys in Superbad were, I think they were sophomores in high school, I think. And I asked Jonah Hill, I interviewed Jonah Hill, and I said, why were you wearing that's a strange shirt? And he wasn't sure. And then I figured out the reason. The costume designer on that movie was one of Richard Pryor's ex-wives. So she threw it on there as kind of a tribute to her ex-husband.
Who but they were on good terms, obviously.
They were on good terms, yeah.
Otherwise, they would have put his picture on the center of a dartboard.
Right, right.
Oh, right. I love those little Easter eggs.
Yeah.
But I thought you liked B. Arthur, and I love B. Arthur. It should be known that it was $10,000 to have her face on a tank top, and what I want to know is where do I get one of those tank
tops?
That's
worth every penny. We'll take a quick break, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Speaking of sports, I'm a Sox fan, whatever. The Cubs are playing today, and it's the Cubs are doing pretty well, I understand, Bill.
They're doing beyond well. I mean, they're at almost a record-setting pace for wins for so many different categories, and people want to see the Cubs games on television, certainly. But there's a problem.
There is a problem. Enter Gary Whiteman, Senior VP of Corporate Communications for Tribune Media. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Good to be here.
There's a problem with Dish Network. People have various choices to make on how they see various programs in the city. And a lot of people would want to be watching the Cubs game tonight, but it's been blocked out, hasn't it? What's going on with Dish Network?
Well, actually, the game is going to get underway, I think, in about an hour or so. It's an afternoon game with the Nats. And if you're a Dish subscriber here in Chicago, the game's being carried on WGN-TV. You won't be able to get it. And the reason you won't be able to get it is because Dish forced WGN-TV, along with 41 of our other stations in their markets, in our markets and their subscribers, off the air on Sunday night. And the reason they did that was because we've been unable to come to an agreement about what they should pay us for retransmitting our programming.
And everybody pays everybody. I mean, that's how this world operates.
It is. And we're only asking and have only been asking for the same rates we get from other cable, telco, cable operators, satellite operators. And we've only been asking for the same rates they pay, that Dish pays other programmers. So we're not looking to set the market on any of this stuff. We're merely looking for the market rate. And Dish is...
They disagreed with the original proposal.
They disagree with what they feel like they should be paying. But lately, more importantly even than that is, they aren't even talking to us. So we can't negotiate with ourselves. We gave them a proposal on Sunday night. And
which is not your typical thing anyway, because it's Sunday evening, you know?
Well, these things, you know, to be fair, these things always tend to get down to the wire and go over the last 24 hours or so. But in this case, we gave yet another proposal to them Sunday evening and have heard basically nothing. They've not engaged on the proposal. They haven't come back with a counter. They haven't even told us when they think they'll come back with a counter. And that's disingenuous because they're out there telling their customers, oh, we're negotiating around the clock. They're not. That has not been going on. And as a result of that, you know, you've got people, their customers and our viewers caught in the middle. So they can't see the Cub game today. Tomorrow
Which stinks.
Night, well, tomorrow night, you know, it does stink. And even for a Sox fan, I'm glad that you're saying
it is.
But tomorrow night in three of our markets, our ABC affiliates have been blacked out on Dish. And you will not, those folks in those markets will not be able to get game six of the NBA Finals. Even going a step further, this weekend when Fox airs the U.S. Open Golf Tournament, in 14 of our markets where we have Fox affiliates,
their
subscribers will not get the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Now, that's just wrong.
It's not fair for someone who subscribes to Dish Network and wants to. That's the beauty of network and satellite. You turn on the TV, you see what you want, you pick your packages, but this is absolutely out of the control of the viewer.
Right.
Gary, right. What happens?
And we're frustrated with that. I mean, that's very frustrating for us because they're not talking to us.
What happens if you're a subscriber to Dish and you still have X amount of months left on your deal? I know that the ads say, call Dish Network, tell them you want the service, you want to keep WGN, you want to keep these other channels. But
right.
you should be asking
for a rebate. You should be asking for a refund. You should be trying to get them. You should be demanding that they get the station back on the air in your market. There's a number here in Chicago that we're urging people to call. It's 855-YES-WGN-9. And that actually in numeric form translates to 855-937-9469. You can also get more information on the WGN-TV website. You'll see a banner at the top.
Yeah.
You can click on that. It'll give you a lot of information about what's going on in negotiations.
But I have
although
to
I
think
can sit here and tell you nothing's
really nothing's going. Happening because they're not negotiating with
right.
you. But I have to think that for most people who have Dish Network, they don't want a couple of bucks back on their monthly bill. They want their service to continue as normal.
Right.
And you want that too. Everybody wants that.
Sure. We absolutely do. And we stand ready to negotiate a fair deal. Like I said, we're not looking to set the market. We're merely looking to get what others get
right.
and what Dish pays others for their programming. Now, we have some really quality programming. I mean, when you're talking about marquee events like the NBA Finals, Cubs baseball, the U.S. Open, on our cable channel, WGN America, we've got two really strong shows, Underground and Outsiders. Now, if people missed them when they originally aired in the first quarter of this year, for instance, with Underground on July 2nd, they're conducting an Underground marathon.
Yeah.
You could catch up, watch all the shows straight through, binge watch.
Yeah, right.
Everybody does it. That will be unavailable because WGN America is unavailable to the entire country on the Dish system.
Right.
So there's a lot of stuff out there that people are missing.
Right.
And it's totally unfair to you, the viewer. So if you have Dish Network, we're not saying cancel it, but we're saying call this number. If you want to see all these sporting events and shows that Gary Whiteman spoke of, call 855-YES-WGN-9. Tell them you want to get WGN on your Dish Network, and if not, then maybe you should think about changing providers.
It's always an option for people and something that they can consider. And you know, we hope if this goes on for much longer that they actually will switch providers because you shouldn't have to put up with this.
Right.
So what happens if they get the pressure from people calling 855-YES-WGN-9? Is there a chance that this could be ironed out in the next hour and a half when the Cubs game starts?
You know what? We want to negotiate. We're ready. We could go at a moment's notice. I mean, this is not because we're not sitting around twiddling our thumbs. We're prepared to work. If this were something Dish wanted to get done, we could have gotten it done Sunday night. We would have worked through the night. We could have gotten them extended on a short-term basis. They didn't want to do that. We actually offered them, because we know they drag their feet, we actually offered them a 60-plus day extension of the deadline for negotiations.
Yeah.
They rejected it. Now, that would have gotten you all the way through the summer, would have gotten you all the way through the Cubs, would have gotten you the U.S. Open, the NBA. They rejected it.
Seems a little selfish.
Well, I don't know. It's frustrating, and it's got to be frustrating for Dish viewers, which, again, has an impact on their subscribers. In the last year or so, they've lost more than 100,000 subscribers.
Ooh.
And I think it just demonstrates the kind of callous disregard they have for the people who have their service. And you know, look, I think it's very frustrating all the way around, and we want to get a deal done. We could get a deal done in 24 hours without any problem at all, as long as somebody comes to the table and is willing to negotiate.
You got to communicate
fairly,
to negotiate.
You got to talk,
though.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
The part I don't understand. What's in it for them to not communicate? They're losing revenue. Why wouldn't they sit down with you?
I don't know. It's almost like they're living in an alternate reality. It just doesn't. It doesn't make a lot of sense because you'd think they'd want to do right by their customers.
You would hope, yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be in their mindset to do that. So we're urging people to call to make their voice known. Look, I've taken emails from Dish customers. I know they're frustrated. We're frustrated too. And you know, I'm trying to respond to everybody that sure. that writes in and let them know where things stand.
All right. So Gary Whiteman, he's a senior VP of corporate communications for Tribune Media. And again, the number to call numerically and the other way
is 855-YES-WGN-9. And that's numerically 855-937-9469. Please call and let Dish know you're outraged at sure. the way you're being treated.
You know what you should do is you should call and say you're outraged because you want to watch the Cubs game tonight and then go to a neighbor's house who has someone else.
Well, and for you, I'll tell you that it'll impact you on Sunday because WGN has a Sox game on Sunday.
Yeah.
And if
right,
we're
I'm
still
calling.
At this point, you won't see the Sox game.
What about Hazel episodes? I want to see Hazel episodes.
You need antenna TV. That's
right,
what
I'll
you
get
need for that.
Call your
yeah.
local
I'll,
provider.
I'll talk to them.
Exactly.
Gary, good luck, and good luck
Thank
to the
you.
Viewers out there who are going to miss a lot of stuff.
Thanks.
Thanks, Gary.
Appreciate
good luck
it.
With this. A quick break. Steve with the news. More ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Are you crying yet?
If you play this for another couple seconds, you'll see tears in my eyes.
Steve,
it's,
you?
It's very emotional.
It's a very important song.
Baseball, you do even know what it is.
Da, 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 da.
It's the theme from The Natural. I want to say Randy Newman. Is it Randy Newman who wrote this, composed this?
Yes.
It is, right?
According to Kevin, who
it
just
is?
Nodded. I didn't know
who
that.
Who doesn't know who Randy Newman is?
Well, Kevin had... I don't want to tattle, but
Please
Kevin
do.
Has not seen the movie The Natural.
Mm. Which I find shocking. I've seen it. It's a wonderful movie, but in my humble opinion, it affects men more than women.
You know, I think it does because with sports movies, it's the only time guys are allowed to cry.
Except
if
for
we
you.
See, I cried during The Great Muppet Caper.
Hey, Bill.
I got sad during that. Yeah, Steve.
Want to have a catch?
I'll have a catch with
That's
you.
That's not from this movie, though.
I know, but it still makes me cry, okay?
Right.
Okay, because can I just say, I asked that same question,
oh.
and then, and he goes, yeah, that's the wrong movie.
Yeah.
That's
still,
Field of Dreams.
That,
that
moment is just...
Yeah. All right, let me ask you this then, Steve, because I feel like a dummy. I see movies, and then I forget that I've seen them,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I watch them, which I found out your wife is like sometimes, too, where like she'll read a book, and at the end of the book, she'll go, oh, I already
yeah,
read that.
Yeah, on the last page.
I'm like that with movies. One-hour photo with...
Robin Williams.
I thought I never saw it, and about the last 10 minutes, I go, yeah, we did see this
oh,
before.
Yeah.
So when I saw The Natural, I loved it. It was a great movie. Is that Robert Redford?
Robert Redford's
okay.
in that, yep.
But I didn't recall that there was some kind of shooting
oh,
that
yeah.
was in it.
And pivotal.
Okay. Well,
up at the Edgewater Hotel, right? Wasn't it?
Steve, well done.
Thank
Funny you.
You
say that because we have Lindsay Rice in the studio. She's a reporter for DNA Info. And Edgewater is your beat, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I live in Edgewater, and it's part of my beat, Edgewater, Rogers Park, and West Rogers Park.
Okay, so explain the tragic and true story of the shooting that inspired that movie with the lovely theme by Randy Newman, The Natural.
So this is just a really crazy story. I came across this in just like my obsession with the hotel and its history, which was knocked down in the late 1960s, early 1970s. But if it had still been up this year, actually June 3rd, it would have been 100 years
wow.
of the hotel being here.
And why'd they tear it down? Just it was decrepit, it was falling apart, or?
When Lakeshore Drive extended past Foster all the way up to Hollywood in the 1950s, it totally knocked out their private beach, which
oh.
was a huge draw. And then they kind of replaced it with a pool, and it was really just
Not
never
the same.
The same after that. So thanks a lot, Lakeshore Drive. You ruined everything.
Yeah,
pretty much.
It always does.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure we can all relate. So, so in just kind of reading about the hotel, I came across this story, which is depicted in the movie The Natural. And in real life, it's about former Cub first baseman Eddie Waitkus,
mm-hmm.
And at the end of the 1948 season, start of the 1949 season, he was traded from the Cubs to the Phillies.
All right.
Little did he know that he had a fan here in Chicago who lived in Lincoln Park at the time, Ruth Ann Steinhagen, and she had a very difficult upbringing. She describes like being very lonely, very sad, not ever being happy, and she developed an obsession with weight.
Stalker, I think we call it these days.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, what this whole case ended up doing was being one of the first high-profile stalking cases in the U.S., which really brought a lot of attention to it, which, you know, sort of ironically, now the stalking is included in the Violence Against Women Act.
Right.
But, of course, this is an instance where it's the other way around.
And what this is in the 40s?
This happened in 1949, 67 years ago yesterday, so wow. June 14th. So when he came through in the 1948 season, a lot of the teams used to stay at the hotel in Edgewater because it was pretty close to Wrigley Field and it was, you know, real swanky for the nice right. ball players. And so she knew that he was going to be there. About a month before, she made a reservation. She checked in the day that the team, the day before the team checked
so
in.
So she's ready.
So she's all ready. She's geared up.
But Lindsay, at this point, mm-hmm. the two of them had not met.
They had not met. He was completely unaware of her. However, when he was playing for the Cubs, she would go see him many times at mm-hmm. Wrigley Field play.
Mm-hmm.
So the day of this game comes, there's a game with the Phillies playing the Cubs. And she goes and she watches until about the sixth inning. And then it's time to put her head in motion. So she gets a cab. She goes back to the hotel. She starts getting everything prepared. She has a 22-gauge rifle with her. She props it up in the closet. Some reports said that she wasn't really a heavy drinker, but that she actually ordered a few drinks that night.
To loosen you up before you, you know, you follow through with your stalking.
Oh, right, right. You know, just pre-stalking jitters.
It's not funny, but it is.
Right, right. Of course, no, not funny. But
was her plan to forgive me for asking this, but was her plan to seduce him, sleep with him, and then kill him, or
that's
was that
what
not
you should
even,
do? That's the way
order.
You go.
That's the right order.
You would think so, but no. She seemed like she really just
wanted him dead
because she didn't want anyone else to have him. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Is that it? Yeah.
Pretty much. She didn't. She felt really betrayed once he.
Oh, when he left the
got
Cubs?
Traded because. No longer could she come, you know, she described like, well, one day I just saw his face, like everything in my life was terrible. And then one day I saw him and all of a sudden the feeling of happiness grew and grew and grew each time I, you know, saw him. So
right.
when he got traded,
her
he
happiness
was leaving her basically.
Was taken away.
Right.
Wow.
So,
I got to rewatch The Natural now.
In the movie, it's a little bit different, but
there's more of a sexual component to it, right? In the
movie? There's some more flirtation happening in the movie. So,
I'm trying to remember. It was Barbara Hershey, I think, who plays that character, right?
Yeah, the character's last name was Bird. I remember.
Bonnie or Barbara Bird, one of those.
Yeah,
I think.
Barbara Bird, something
Does that
like
sound
that.
Right? Yes. Barbara Bird Bennett. No, that's that's completely different. You can't pin this. Or it's Harriet Bird.
Yeah, that's
it's Harriet
it.
Bird.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
You can't pin this on Barbara Bird Bennett. Nice try.
I swear we'll I gotta rewatch this movie because I don't even remember that. So she's got the shotgun ready and she's just waiting. Is she in his room?
No, she's in her own room. She writes a note on, you know, stationery from the hotel that says, you know, you don't know who I am. I know this sounds really unusual, but I have some really important news for you. I think it's, you know, to your interest to come see me when you get this. I promise I won't take much of your time. And she signs it Ruth Ann Burns. So, you know, sort of a similar name. But so around 11:30, he comes over to her room.
What, did she slide it under the door or something?
She either
left it at the desk?
Yeah, some people said she either slid it under the door, she left it on his door. She paid the bellboy $5 to bring it to his door. But either way, it got there. So she waits. She kind of like takes a nap, just chills out. And then...
Wait, can I ask a favor? Because there's more to the story. It starts good. It gets even better and more twisted. Hold your thoughts for just a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Lindsay Rice is here telling us about the true story behind Baseball's
awesome.
The Natural. This is good. Can you come by like when I'm ready to sleep at night and tell me these stories? I love this sort of thing. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. If you've read the novel The Natural by Bernard Malamud or seen the movie directed by Barry Levinson, you know that there's a very pivotal scene where Roy Hobbs gets shot by something of a stalker. It was early to call her a stalker, but she was something of a stalker. Well, it turns out that that's a real life story. Lindsay Rice from DNA Info is here. She covered the story. She knows the story inside out. You were telling us the story For people just tuning in, Lindsay, just a brief background of where we are so far in the story.
So at this point in the story, a 19-year-old Ruth Ann
Steinhagen.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
I've got your article right here.
Ruth Ann Steinhagen, 19-year-old Chicago woman. She was a typist. She was obsessed with a former Cub, Eddie Waitkus, first baseman, who had been traded to the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
And she kind of felt betrayed by that, and she formed an obsession with him and began stalking him. She stalked him when he came to the Edgewater Beach Hotel, which has since been demolished, but she checked in the hotel about the same time the team did, and she wrote a very mysterious note summoning him to her room. So,
and she just say, the door's open, just open it, come on in, it's easy, I'm there, I have important news to tell you.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, come find me. And so actually he telephoned her when he got the note,
yeah.
And she said, give me a half an hour to get dressed, I was sleeping. And so 11:30 p.m., he comes to her room, and, you know, he comes inside. She either welcomes him in or says, you know, come right on in. And, you know, he's kind of like, what's going on? Hello. And everybody who I wrote about Waitkus that I saw described him as a very friendly, like one of the nicest guys that they knew.
Was he married?
I'm not sure if he was at that time.
Yeah.
I know he was later. Some said he might have had a girlfriend on the road. So I don't know. I'm not trying to get into his family's
business.
And
it was common, wasn't it, for a lot of the baseball players? I mean,
back then. Anymore, Wendy, but back then.
Why are you winking? Do you have something in your eye?
There's a weird dust mite or something. But back then, the players weren't always.
But I mean, the rock and rollers and baseball players, I mean, they have groupies, and it's, you know, he gets this mysterious note, you know, I won't take much of your time. I want to talk to you about something very important. If he's a nice guy, he's going to go see what she wants.
He's
curious. Exactly.
Yeah. Either way, whatever he was expecting, he was happy to oblige, it seemed. So he did go to her room, and so he came in and sat down, and she said something like, I have a surprise for you. And she turns around.
She's right.
And she definitely is right.
She did.
She turns around. She goes to the closet where she has her rifle all propped up and ready for her. And she turns around and points it at him. And some people reported that she said something like, you won't be bothering me anymore.
Oh, that's nice.
And, you know, and in his mind, he's probably thinking like, who are you?
Right.
I didn't even know I was bothering you. And she shot him right in the chest, right on the right side, right below his heart. And he kind of, she described later on in court documents that she just kind of was like, I couldn't believe that I did it. I didn't see him bleeding. I didn't see a bullet hole. I was just kind of in shock. And he was just asking me, you know, baby, why did you do that?
It's a good question.
What did you do that for? You know, and she said that he was just looking at her smiling. And she kind of stayed there with him, cradled his head. And some people said that they even held hands while she, you know, she called the front desk and said, call a doctor. There's a person who's been shot.
Yeah.
And so police came and doctors came, and it all happened pretty quickly after that.
He did not die.
He didn't die.
That was my next question.
He survived. And actually, this happened on June 14th.
Is this where the phrase bleeding cubby blue comes from? Is this the first time that anybody truly fled?
He was a Philly.
Oh, he did get traded.
So he was technically a Philly.
Did he still play professional baseball after this? Or
he did.
He went back and played after this.
Yeah, for several more seasons, for about, I believe, until 54 or 55, he continued to play, and then he retired after that.
Imagine getting shot in the chest and still somehow being able to play Major League Baseball. That seems unlikely.
Well,
doesn't
he didn't
it?
Do it right afterwards.
Well, no, not the next day.
Right,
he wasn't on the 10-minute DL or
right.
anything like that. Right.
Yeah, I mean, this had happened in June, so he was out for the rest of the 49 season, you know, recovering, and he was in critical condition initially, but he was out of the hospital in like 10 days or so.
Wow.
So, but, you know, still with injuries, but he really wasn't.
He missed vital organs, obviously.
Yeah. So he. But he was back for the 1950, the start of that season.
He was. Mm-hmm. And what happened
to her?
So
we only have like a minute or so.
So the case centered a lot around her mental health. She ended up getting committed to Kankakee County Hospital or State Hospital. She underwent electric shock therapy for just under 3 years. And then once they found that she was quote unquote sane, they brought her back to the Cook County Jail where they thought about retrying her, but he refused to ever press charges against her. So
why?
Seriously?
He just didn't. I don't know. It just speaks to his character. I guess he just never did.
And he survived. So, yeah. You know,
he died of cancer in 1972 and she actually continued living in Chicago. She went free after that. She lived in Chicago.
Not allowed to attend Cub games, I'm hoping, right? They keep a picture of her at the front gate.
Yeah. and she died in 2012, kind of just like living under the radar.
That recently?
Yeah. And it was discovered. Wow. I think in like 2013. Shortly after her death, another reporter was doing some other story and discovered that she had died and made that connection. And
even when the book and the movie were both big hits, mm-hmm. Nobody put that together at the time and said, we got to talk to the woman who inspired this. That didn't happen.
Well, I'm sure people did try to get in touch with her, but all the accounts that I read described her in her later years as being very reclusive and private and that she basically never talked to the press about it at all. Mm.
That's such a weird, strange case of you're injuring someone that you idolize, but then she was able to take care of him and hold his hand and spend time with him. It's like she created that situation so they could be close.
Yeah.
That's really wild, yet very poetic.
Yeah, it's so strange. I mean, you got to have some compassion and like some empathy for her as well, because the way that she described just growing up was tough. And so it really seemed like she was yearning for a close connection with somebody and kind of invented that with this person, but then actually did save his life in this strange twist.
She made the call. It's a lot of it's surprising, but she was only 19 in the movie. Barbara Hershey's character is up in her 30s somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you kind of create your own backstory there. But 19 is incredibly young for something like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
This was awesome. You've got to come back the next time you have one of these little mysteries and tell us about it. This is really fascinating. Lindsay Rice in the studio, reporter for DNA Info. You can go to dnainfo.com. Any other website we need to send people to find you?
You can find us on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram, DNA Info. Chai.
Is that a real one or did you make that up? That's a real one?
I'm making it up right now, so that's cool. That's fine. Hurry home and get it going.
All right, good.
Oh,
Lindsay,
this was really cool.
Yeah, excellent.
Story
next
time.
Next time, the true story about angels in the outfield, next time you're up, will you? All right, that'll
start
be
fun. It right now.
All right, thank you, Lindsay. We appreciate
thank
it. You. Lindsay Rice with DNA Info. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. You can reach us. You can text us. You can call us all at 312-981-7200.
All right. I want to talk about this Disney alligator attack again. That's what everybody's talking about today, because it's horrifying to think that it could happen to just your Midwest family from Nebraska going to Disney.
It's just beyond shocking. There's no word to describe how shocking it is.
We have some fight. Now, the body has not been found. Is that correct, Steve?
No, it is not.
But they said earlier, they said a little over an hour ago, that at this point...
Oh, they considered a recovery now.
Yeah.
They think they have caught five alligators and cut them open, frankly, to see if the body was inside, and it has not been the case with the five that they've caught.
I watched the press conference last night as this was breaking. It was a little after midnight, and Orange County Sheriff Jerry Demings was there. And at first, he was calling it a recovery effort. He did not say a rescue at the very beginning.
Right.
Because, I mean, I don't know how that child could have survived right then and there.
Right. Right.
Even if the alligator didn't chomp down on him, if the alligator swam away, which he did with the boy in his mouth, that boy would have drowned.
Yeah. Right. There was almost no scenario. I mean, you like to be hopeful, but there was almost no way for this to end well.
And the alligator is, we've tried to contact Brookfield Zoo to talk to someone from the reptile house. I guess we didn't try Lincoln Park Zoo, but I wanted to find out some facts about the alligator, because the alligator was just... there was splashing in the water as the kid was walking there, And the alligator went to investigate it, and it's like, okay, here's some food.
Right.
I don't think, you know, he's trying to break up a family. Some fast facts from Heavy.com. The boy was at the side of the lagoon with his parents and his four-year-old sister. And I heard reports at the press conference that there was another child.
I thought they said two.
In an enclosure, like in a playpen type thing. That's what I thought I heard.
I don't remember that part, but I'm trying to remember the bits and pieces, but I believe that there was, in addition to the child that was taken by the alligator, two brothers or sisters, right?
Yes, there were two other children. The boy's father tried wrestling the alligator away, which, God, I can't even imagine the feeling. You're there, your little kid is, you know, splashing in the water because it's a resort beach in Disney, and the sign says no swimming.
Yeah.
The kid wasn't swimming. He was just walking along, splashing his feet as the water reached the shore.
It would be surrealistic. As it was happening, your brain wouldn't be able to process it.
No, but you'd obviously fight to get... I mean, it's like somebody takes your kid. I'm telling you, in that split second, I don't even think you're comprehending it's an alligator. It's just something has grabbed your kid, whether it be a person, an alligator, an ostrich. You're just fighting off to get your kid back.
But remember a little over a week ago when we were telling the story, the horrific story of the Cincinnati Zoo, I said my impulse, if I see my kid in an enclosure with a wild animal... I wouldn't even think about it. I would jump in and try to either get the child away from the animal or distract the animal in some way. It would just be almost an instinct move, right? No matter what was going on, you go, I have to save this kid.
I don't know. That kid fell 15 feet. It's not like it was right next to you being attacked, that little boy.
I'm not trying to be heroic. I would just, if it was one of my daughters, or I have to be honest, if it was somebody else's kid and nobody was doing anything, I'd say somebody has to do something. I think it's me, and I would jump in and try to do whatever I could to get that kid away.
But we do getting word that the county sheriff down there will have a news conference coming up at 3 on what they're describing as developments in the attack.
In Orlando, they have to just be asking themselves what could possibly be next. After the 3 out of the last 5 days have just had something so bizarrely random happen all in that same city within such a short span of time. The girl from The Voice, the shooting at the nightclub,
and that's the story we're forgetting. I mean, it just...
Right, because they've come too fast and furiously.
The horrendous event there that with the concert shooting.
Yeah.
You know, the Fish and Wildlife Commission advises that humans never approach alligators, regardless of size, or feed the wild animals. Unprovoked attacks can be hard to avoid. The majority of unprovoked alligator attacks occur near or in brackish fresh water, and only when the animal feels threatened or needs food. If you're unsure if a fresh brackish area is safe for swimming, don't go in and be cautious around the shoreline. You know, I got to tell you, to me, with Disney's sign saying no swimming, it should really say don't even walk along the shoreline.
This is 100% purely a guess at this point, but you have to imagine there's going to be a lawsuit, a quite sizable lawsuit against Disney. And exactly what you said is going to be what the issue is that sufficient enough warning for something like this?
I really think you're being hard on Disney for this. I mean, they put up a sign saying no swimming.
That means no swimming. The kid wasn't swimming. Alligators can come up on the shore.
I don't know. You just said they should put up signs saying don't even walk along.
But Steve,
I was being facetious about that.
Were
you
okay? I didn't. I mean,
no swimming and no walking the shoreline. That's what the kid was doing.
And I'm not blaming Disney at all.
It's not their fault.
I mentioned earlier, I've been in exactly the same spot at this same hotel with my kids in the water.
It's a freak accident.
Okay, that's kind of the point, I think. I mean, but you might put, you know, at the buffet, say, don't overeat. You can't warn for everything. You're telling people to stay out of the water, but you seem to be upset that they're not giving you more reasons.
It doesn't say don't stay out of the water. It says no swimming. The kid wasn't swimming. And I suggested earlier, and you brought this up during the break when you were just before you were going to start the business lunch, I said that there should be a sign or something that says, you know, beware of alligators or caution. And I feel Disney won't put that because that's like kind of scaring you before you needed to be scared.
So you think that they might have recognized they should have put the warning, but because they didn't want to have an unhappy face, they didn't put the sign up.
Can I tell you one reason why I think that?
Yeah, because I just have a hard time with that.
The alligator warning signs, Hyatt Regency Grand Cypress, excuse me, let's do this again. The Hyatt Regency Grand Cypress, which neighbors the Walt Disney World Resort, has signs warning of alligators in its lake. Why do they have the signs and Disney doesn't? It's
well, there
the
are
same
signs.
Lake.
I mean, there are signs everywhere down there. You know, my kids
not at Disney.
No, not at Disney, but I mean in Florida, my kids went ziplining over alligator-infested waters.
Disney yeah. and saying that why is if there are alligator warning signs just miles away at the Hyatt, why doesn't Disney put caution alligators? The signs warning visitors to beware of alligators were previously posted at a tourist resort just miles from Walt Disney Lagoon, where the two-year-old boy has disappeared. The clearly marked signs, which say no swimming, beware, and please be aware of alligators in the lake, are located around the edge of the Hyatt Regency Grand Cypress in Orlando. So no swimming, beware, please be aware of alligators in the lake. Why doesn't Disney have that?
Disney is better than any corporation that I know of at spinning things positively. Even the
happiest
way,
place on earth.
But you and I have talked about this. Even the way tour guides, like if you ask a question at Disney World, how do I get to the bathroom? They won't point. They do this thing with their hands.
They do two fingers.
Right, because pointing is too deliberate. Right. And too, so they have this down to a science. So even wording a sign, even if they know that there's alligators in there, they don't want to put the word alligators because that scares people. And maybe they'll have to now. And but you could put dangerous wildlife. That sounds friendlier somehow.
Well, Brian texted us earlier when we were talking about this, and I saved this text because what about using nicer signs that say something like, notice wildlife present, use caution, or something like that? I'm telling you. You guys, if I saw no swimming sign, to me in my head, I'm thinking, oh, there's no lifeguard. It's, you know, there might be boats in the way. I shouldn't go swimming. I am telling you, I would not hesitate to walk along with my feet in the water on the shoreline. If I saw a sign that said, beware
alligators in water
or alligator, you know, caution, be on the lookout for alligators, I wouldn't touch the water.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That is a huge difference. No swimming. And as the Hyatt posted, they have a no swimming sign, a beware sign, and please be aware of alligators in the lake.
Even that said, when you're there, much like Westworld, you believe you're in a theme park where nothing horrible can happen
to you.
You're trained to believe. I told you this story off air, but I'll tell you on air too. When my daughters were little, my wife was playing with them at this exact same hotel at the Grand Floridian Hotel, and they were watching a mother duck and three little ducks, and they're watching these ducks walk along by the pool, and a big bird came out like a hawk, swooped down and took one of the ducks in its mouth and flew away. And my daughters looked at my wife as if to say, what? That doesn't happen here. Can that happen here? Yeah, it can happen there.
But you don't think for a minute it's going to. And I know these are wild animals. And I'm not necessarily blaming Disney.
Yeah.
But I'm saying...
No, it's so...
But are they aware of the alligators? Should they have put more warning signs? There's been reports that a lot of employees at Disney have seen alligators. I had read earlier about an alligator swimming near Splash Mountain.
Well, I don't want to pick a fight with you, but it sounds like you are blaming Disney if you're saying...
I'm not blaming them. It's an accident. But
okay, but if you're saying they should have put up a sign that said alligators, the implication is had they put up the sign, the child wouldn't have been in the water and he would have been safe. That's, you know, that's
blaming...
Would
you go in the water if there was a sign that said alligators could be present?
I'm just saying that is kind of blaming Disney.
Well, I'm just kind of talking out loud. I
what?
Well, Steve, in a way, I feel if Disney was aware of alligators, I know it's built on swampland and it's in Florida, but if they were aware of the fact that alligators could be in that lagoon, I do feel that the people staying there should be aware that there could be alligators in the lagoon.
When I was a kid, we'd stay in Delray Beach nearly every year. And what would happen at the place we stayed, it's a smaller motel on the ocean in Delray. So on some mornings, the guys who owned the hotel would knock on the doors and they would say, there's been shark sightings nearby, not right off on our beach, but within a mile or two radius. So you would think that might make people stay out of the water on those days. It never did. There were just as many people in the water on those days than there were any other day. Because you kind of have a feeling like, well, I'll be vigilant. I'll keep my eyes open. And if I see a shark, I'll stay away from the shark. But stuff happens so fast.
I know.
There's nothing you can do.
And they're wild animals. And I get that. That's why I'm not really blaming Disney. But if they were aware of alligators could be in there, I have to be honest with you, until today, I wouldn't have thought for a minute there was an alligator
right
that could possibly come up and eat me when I'm at Disney.
Right.
Did
I
you?
Get that. No. No, because you fool yourself into believing
that they're,
you're as safe. How could you possibly be more safe than when you're there? But there's always going to be that fluke factor that you just can't control, you know? All right, let's take a break. I know you guys have thoughts on this, and we appreciate those thoughts. I see all the lines are filled. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It was terribly tragic to hear the news of a 2-year-old boy snatched from the shores of the, which Disney hotel?
It's the Grand Floridian, the most premier of all the Disney resort hotels.
And I'm not trying to fight with Steve Bertrand either, and I don't really know how I feel because half of me thinks it's really not Disney's fault. But if I'm hearing that there are alligator warning signs posted at the Hyatt just miles from Disney's Seven Seas Lagoon and those waterways connect, the Hyatt has no swimming, which is what Disney had. Beware, yeah. And please be aware of alligators in the lake. Another thing that I found online about expert advice on how to keep a close eye on children in environments with water that's around where gators could be. Most gators will lunge at smaller prey that is within a few feet of the shoreline. Well, if this is a fact, then the no swimming sign, in my opinion, means no swimming. It doesn't mean don't walk the shoreline. If there's an alligator could be here,
right.
Alligators could be present, then I'm not going to walk near the water.
I can't figure out how they separate. The way the water is structured by not just that hotel, but all the hotels on Disney property is, there's always areas where you're encouraged to swim. And
even
then
like
others.
On a beach-like area, a man-made beach-like area, you can swim at the Disney resorts?
Yeah. I mean, we have the Polynesian is right next door to that. The Grand Floridian on the other side is Fort Wilderness and the Contemporary. And all those waterways connect. So if you have an alligator or alligators in part of those waters, they have access to all that water. It's like a web of lakes and rivers. It's all connected, you know?
I just, let's talk to Kelly, because I'm sorry, and maybe I'm a bad parent, because if I was there with my kids at a Disney resort watching movie night and the sign said no swimming, I'm telling you, I don't know that I wouldn't let my kids walk along the water and step in the water at the shoreline, because I'm just like, no swimming. Oh, no, honey, you can't go in. Oh, sure, we can walk the beach. They're two different things. Kelly, what do you think?
I agree. I think there should be a sign. You know, if I remember Steve Bertrand's argument, they put coffee is hot on cups. Everyone knows, and it's a stupid argument because everyone brings that one up all the time, but everyone knows coffee's hot, but they put a sign up. They put it on your cup. Not everybody knows there's going to be alligators because they're from another state or because they're from somewhere else and it's Disney. So why not just let people know?
Better to be safe than sorry. Warn, you know, this is a welcome to Walt Disney World. This would be a long sign. That's why I need to edit myself. But you could put something like alligators may be present.
It's a natural habitat. There may be alligators.
There
I
you
don't
go.
Know. Something. It's not that way. You're not saying it's, you know, Disney has to be perfect, but at the same time, it's a natural habitat. That may be something that's lurking in the water. You go. Here's the information. Do with it what you will.
All right. Thank you for calling. And that's what I mean. No swimming is something different to me. No swimming is don't go swimming.
When I've seen those same signs at that hotel at the Grand Floridian, and I told you this earlier, I never assumed, there wasn't even a small percentage that I thought the reason they don't want me swimming in this water is because there could be alligators. There's other potential risks with boats coming in and out of where the marina is.
Or no lifeguard.
Or no lifeguard.
Something.
Right. But I've been there so many times, and I never in a million years thought alligators were that close to me there.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, I actually called it because I agree with Wendy. I mean, Bill, that's the problem. Someone said it before. I mean, Disney either knows there's alligators there, and they don't want to put it in sign because they want to keep that aura of happy, friendly, wonderful place and not get people afraid. Now, if that's a situation, then they're going to have a big loss in this lawsuit. If, on the other hand, they've taken precautions to keep alligators out by putting up nets or bars on those intercoastal waterways they have down there that link all the different lakes, well, then maybe and something happened, and they're not keeping an eye on those to be sure that they're working properly, or one was damaged, which means an alligator could have gotten in, then they're going to have a problem, too. So this alligator just didn't drop out of the air. It's been in there. Someone should have seen it, monitored it, known it, and there should be signs up there. No swimming means, well, it might be, you know, a sharp drop-off or something.
Right, or rocks underfoot. That's what no swimming means to me.
I was down at Hilton Head years ago, and down at Hilton Head, they have all these water, intercoastal waterways along the golf courses, and I was by the pool, and there was a guy standing there reading a book, laying down. He had a three-year-old daughter throwing rocks in the water, and I yelled to him like four or four times. Finally, looked up and said, "What the heck do you want?" I said, "There's alligators in there.
Yeah.
There's one right over here at this side of it sleeping." And he got up. I could see I was 50 feet away. His eyes bugged out almost as far as I was. He grabbed his daughter and ran back and was, "Why don't we tell Mommy there's alligators in there?"
Wow.
He was fighting to death. He couldn't believe it. Now, they have signs up down there, "Beware of alligators." The guy didn't pay attention. That's different.
But that is totally different.
Yeah, I agree with. And even then, you know, you still have to watch out for little kids. Like the thing in Cincinnati in the zoo. Kids can jump away in a minute and are seconds. And, you know, parents need to be very vigilant watching little kids.
And the dad was right there fighting that gator off, and so was the mom. Somebody says, you know, what happened to, oh, God, you got to hear this. Whatever became of taking some individual accountability? According to the sign that was listed, I think they were being responsible.
I guess.
They weren't swimming. Ed, thank you very much for calling. Walking along the beach is different than no swimming. It really is.
See, my issue is that sometimes terrible things happen.
I agree, Steve.
And there have been, as I said earlier, millions of people and hundreds of thousands of little kids at Disney who have not been attacked by alligators.
Tell this to the parents of this kid.
No, don't do that to me. This was a terrible, awful thing. But I think sometimes we take comfort in finding someone to blame really quickly, and sometimes just awful, terrible things happen, and this was one of them.
You know, I put this in the same, and Steve, I agree with you. I put this in the same bracket as, you know how every once in a while in the winter months here, you'll see signs all around the city, beware of ice falling from buildings.
Falling
and
ice.
Then sometimes ice falls off the top of a building and crushes somebody, kills somebody. And you just say to yourself, I guess you could try to blame the building for it, although they posted a sign saying watch out for it. But even if you look up and see it coming, what's going to happen? It's a fluke.
But you know that it could happen.
Right.
To me, that's a difference of, do you think this family would have let their kid walk in the water said, you know, caution, alligators in lake?
I have to be honest with you, again, because I've been there, if I saw a sign that said exactly that, I would still walk they walked. I mean,
even if it said alligators may be present, I sure as heck wouldn't.
I don't know how far into the water these guys were, but
it had been reported.
Just a foot in, you know, you go, I'm going to be okay here, aren't
alligators I? Alligators come out on the shoreline.
I know, but that's what I'm saying, the way the water is connected there. Would you be at all reticent if you were staying at one of those resorts to using their beach?
No.
You wouldn't, right? So that's the same water. The alligator doesn't know. Wow,
see,
the sign says I'm okay here, but I'm not okay here.
It's just really confusing. You do want to blame someone. We have to take a quick break, and more people want to talk about this, and we'll continue. 312-981-7200, News with Steve Bertrand, next, 720 WGN. Orlando is forever going to be known as a mass shooting area, which my heart goes out to those families. That poor girl from The Voice, Grimmie was her last name. That breaks my heart. She's just doing a meet and greet with fans, and this toddler, I my heart is just aching for all the victims' families and all of these tragedies.
It's almost inconceivable that three such random horrific events could happen in the same city all within less than a week.
All right. We basically we're talking. We're just curious if Disney's aware of the alligator issue.
Well, they are now. They definitely are now. I wonder what will happen differently as a result of this, you know?
That's a great question. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. I love your show. Sorry I'm calling you about this kind of topic,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, thank you.
I had heard of a family from the UK. This has just come out today now that was at the Polynesian back in April. And the Polynesian is on the same waterway lagoon right next to the Grand Floridian. And they were sitting there watching the movie at movie night. And the daughter heard something, and they thought it was a jet ski. And then the family next to them that was watching started screaming alligator as an alligator lunged out of the water.
Wow.
So this is on the same waterway this past April. And the article was letting the people from the UK know, hey, when you go to vacation there, there are alligators there, and there are alligators in Disney World. And they said they alerted Disney personnel back in April. So I would say they clearly knew about the issue. And then somebody had said through all of this that, you know, they continuously monitor and often remove alligators. So I think they have a process by which they are doing this. But obviously they're not letting people know that this kind of thing is a possibility. And if it just happened in April, it's no surprise if it's happening again.
And they were able to remove it. And I have heard that, too, that Disney employees have relocated gators that they've found. But I just would like to know there's a possibility that gators could be in that water.
I agree. I know they stopped the swimming. And originally, when they created all these, there's other bodies of water, you know, by the Yacht and Beach Club, and they're all by resorts that are a little more expensive. You could swim in the water, but they stopped the swimming when, I don't know if you remember earlier in the early 2000s when the bacteria in the water was causing the brain amoeba that was infecting people and stuff. So that's why they closed down River Country and stopped the swimming at all the Disney lakes and lagoons like that, because a boy did die from that bacteria infection.
So wait, does that mean
that's why there's no swimming?
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's wow.
Algae and bacteria in the water,
and it can get up into the brain through your nasal passages.
Yeah, right.
I do remember that.
The water and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about
So they're just posting no swim, but you're thinking, right, no swimming, because you're thinking, okay, maybe because there's no lifeguard on duty. If everybody knew that that was the reason, that changes things too. You wouldn't even think about walking into the water because you have a cut on your foot or something. You don't want to be in infected water, but.
I had no idea that they had gone that far with it. Wow. Wow.
Well, thank you for that information, Lisa. It's tragic any way you spin it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks, Lisa. Take care.
All right, and let's talk to John. Hi, John.
Good afternoon. I used to live in the Orlando area and have been to Disney quite a few times, and just about every time we went to Disney, we would see alligators. If you would take a ride on the monorail where you can get a little bit of elevation and see some of these lakes, and especially some of the more remote lakes, we would always see alligators in the water. And quite a few resorts and, I guess, gated communities in that area have crews that go in at night, and they capture the alligators and relocate them. So a lot of people don't realize that they're out there while they're sleeping, trapping these things and moving them away. So Disney does know that they're there, and I think they should have signs up stating that.
So, John, the monorail that you're talking about, you said the elevated area, it's not the regular monorail that goes from the resorts to the Magic Kingdom in the parking lot. It's the one that goes from the parking to Epcot Center, right? That's that longer monorail ride?
Yeah, and it goes through, I believe, is it, I forget the name of the one resort that it goes right inside the resort, and it ends up going over to the Grand Floridian and the Polynesian also.
Okay.
Yeah, you go on that and you see these gators in the water, especially, you know, the one loop that goes a little bit more remote out around where it's not as developed. That's where you see.
That's the Epcot one. Yeah. Yeah, I remember a couple places where you see it. It does look more like their traditional swampland, but the regular circular loop that goes through the Contemporary is the one you were thinking of, and then the Polynesian, the Grand Floridian, that one you don't really see any swampland-like areas, but the other one, yeah, it's a little less developed.
Right. And I've stayed at the, I'm trying to remember the one that's the log one. I don't remember the name of that resort, but we've stayed there in a lake that was probably less than a quarter mile away. We saw alligators there.
You did? Wow.
They're there. And you know, anywhere, living in a gated community where you have, maintenance on your lakes and everything, they have crews come in just to trap these things because, they know they're there and you never know when they're just going to pop up. We had a, they take dogs and now they're taking children. So It's sad that I think it should be marked that there are alligators there.
I agree. I 100% agree. John, thank you for calling. More people want to talk about this. 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
A lot of people weighing in right now at 312-981-7200. That's our call in and that's our text line. We're talking about the awful and so unpredictable story of what went on in Orlando, Florida. A two-year-old boy still missing, dragged off by an alligator on Disney property.
And look, we're over, we're going on, 15 hours, 16 hours, and this family doesn't even have the body of their child. That's what I cannot stop thinking about.
Yeah.
And there are two siblings that have lost their brother.
Yeah.
It just breaks my heart. It really does. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, guys. This story is, it's breaking my heart. I've been an avid Disney visitor for years. I went there in the mid to late 80s. Stayed at the Polynesian Village, went swimming in that Seven Seas Lagoon that the child was pulled out of. And I want to say when I would go in the late 80s, probably 88, 89, in 1986, there's a hotel called the Fort Wilderness that is basically it's along the same lagoon, two hotels down from the Grand Floridian. They share the same waterway. And back in 86, there was a boy that was a little boy that an alligator had caught along the beach, but he had two older siblings that fought the alligator off and actually saved the little boy. So it's Florida, it's gator territory, and this has been going on for a long time. Well, back in the 80s, there isn't the media that there is now to get a story out so fast. So all these Disney stories, if you look back over the years, that Disney has, I don't want to say hidden, because I love Disney, but deterred from being put out there in the public. Now things happen so quickly where, bam, after it happens, you're leaving Magic Kingdom after the parade and, your phone's blowing up with, oh, I'm going to go back to the Grand Floridian on the bus, and this is what's going on.
This was 1986, so, the 8-year-old. We mentioned this earlier today.
Oh, you did? Okay.
No, that's okay, Cindy. Paul Richard Santa Maria was camping at Disney's Fort Wilderness. It was a resort and campground, playing tetherball, and an alligator came up off the beach and grabbed him. His sister and brother beat the gator and released the kid, and the kid did not die. Has happened, according to reports. That was nearly 30 years ago, and there's been no other incident since then.
Correct. But, and the one girl that did call that mentioned that, there are gator, people that do work close with Disney to eradicate or to take care of and get them off the property, but I think this was just a freak accident.
It is, definitely.
Cindy, thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
At the heart of this, that's the truest thing, is this is a freak accident. 30 years passed since the last one. It doesn't make this any prettier. This is just an awful, awful story. But if you're them, you say to yourself, we've had
much
luck.
Yeah.
Everything must be working somehow.
But again, this is an outdoor movie night on the beach.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I am shocked. I wouldn't have thought for a minute that there would be an alligator walking up on the beach, ever. I know it's Florida, but it's Disney.
Yeah.
Hi, Mike. You're our last call on this.
Hi. I worked at Disney for 8 years, and they do a lot to get rid of the alligators. But first of all, I agree there should be more signage if there is a possibility of gators. But I have a theory of why this might have happened. It's first of all, very rare for an alligator to come out of the water like that with other adults around and then a busy area like that.
It's true. That wasn't a very quiet area. There's a movie playing. There's tons of people.
Right.
It does seem...
Very,
odd.
Very unusual for that to happen. But what may have caused that is some people down there, tourists or some of the other neighbors or other tourists around there, think it's neat to feed the gators, and basically that's a death sentence for the gators, because then they lose their fear of people and become aggressive, and the only way to get rid of them then is to put them down. But I'm just guessing maybe other tourists, in previous days, thought it was neat to throw some food to the skater, and like I said, they lose their fear of man and get aggressive, and things like this happen then.
Don't they have security guards that are kind of standing out there in case that happens to say, don't feed the gators?
Well, it's a big body of water, and it comes in from several different sources, and there could be people in homes and other hotels.
I guess.
Doing something like that.
And, Mike, refresh my memory on that, the waterway system there. That had all been swampland before Disney World opened, and they kind of essentially just drained all the water and made it fresh water. Disney did that on their own prior to Disney opening in 71, right?
Right.
So you would almost think they would have more control over what is in their water system, knowing that, but at some point it becomes impossible with alligators all over the area. It's Central Florida. You can't keep them out forever.
It is possible. In any golf course down there, any little pond, 10 feet wide, or 10 feet around, it's likely has a gator in.
Yeah, but I would think.
Stay away from them? Oh, I know. You could just stay away from them. If if you don't bother them, 99.99% of the time, they're not going to bother you. And the last thing they want to do is mess with the human, really. Because,
right.
That's not their size of things that they want to attack. But
no, they need smaller things because they don't have. We had learned they don't have teeth to chew. They pretty much swallow their prey whole, and that poor baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got to run, Mike, but thank you for checking in. Someone texted, Bill, I stayed at the Wilderness Resort on the same lake as the Grand Floridian 4 years ago. After checking into our room, our family began to explore the hotel and the grounds. We found ourselves along the lake at a beach area, and there were the same no swimming signs. The beach was separated from the lake by a fence. As I looked at the lake, I saw a 4 to 5 foot alligator swimming within 10 feet of the shore. Those animals are there. I made a point to show my kids that we are in the home of dangerous animals. This is a horrible story. Prayers for that little boy.
Wow. Awful. All right. A quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have coming up next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.